Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
It's the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling.
Sure, the world's got troubles, and there's lots going on, but let's be honest, the big story. Hawks win. How about it?
Yeah. Holy mackerel,
our long national nightmare is over.
And the winning begins.
Yeah, you know, a team with this kind of history in the last 11 years. So, I'm having an argument in my head. A team with this kind of history, you don't want to go nuts for a win.
No.
But I say we throw a parade.
The way that sounded after the game is that they may throw a parade, at least to their cars.
Well, you had to figure, guys like Kane and Taves were going, it's never going to end.
Mm-hmm.
It's just never going to end.
Jonathan Taves was sounding so sad after each game.
He was.
He's like, I don't know.
Because they couldn't figure it out.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
And beat a good team with a very whiny superstar, which made it more fun.
Sid the whiny kid.
Yeah. So, Hawks win 6-3. Right. It's not an optical illusion. And now, as Justin said once, the winning begins.
The winning begins. Didn't they rattle off 19 in a row one year to set a record?
Strike short year.
Yeah. LeBron James gave a little tweet saying you're the best. Yeah. Let's do that again.
That'd be okay. Yeah, that'd be just fine. Yeah. All right. Speaking of hockey, Nick, of course, played for the Blackhawks for a very short period of time. They thought it was a little too weird to stay with the team. But he's a huge Hawks fan. We'll get to him coming up, and we'll do the top six here in just a second. Thanks for doing the show yesterday. You guys did do the show yesterday, right? It wasn't just tape that I heard.
Yeah, we did.
It was really 4 hours of Mary making fun of me for ordering a buffalo chicken mac and cheese at lunch.
The biggest entree I've ever seen at a lunch.
It was just nonstop, Steve. When you called in with Spike, I almost said, can you stand in line? I need to talk to you about Mary's behavior.
You can see a picture of that mac and cheese on the website.
Oh, that's right. How are those galleries?
They're great at WGNRadio.com.
People are
on the Steve Cochran Show Facebook.
There was Twitter yesterday, and I didn't see it till later, but they were saying, oh, that's disgusting, or oh, I can't believe you ate that. And then I said, oh, I just ate half. They're like, you said you ate 2/3 on air.
They're
wow.
holding
that's
me to
all
it.
You out.
Hold me to it. So
fake food.
People get so weird about
fake lunch.
Hashtag fake lunch.
Mary, I don't remember. It's funny because Spike yesterday. I don't remember the listeners being as, what's the word I'm looking for? Persnickety. As they are now. But then again, they didn't have access to us
they
the way
have
they did
access.
Before.
Right. Nobody could text us back then. It was great. So we never knew what the show was doing.
But my theory is always it's the same eight people. It's the same eight people that get up and they're cranky for whatever reason.
If I could bring us back to the lunch that we had where the photo gallery is at WGN.
Oh, yeah. Sorry, I wasn't about you there for a second.
Mary pointed out yesterday that Pete Zimmerman, for being a little guy, ate his full meal, and Pete took offense to the little guy comment.
He's such a little guy. He's a little guy.
What do you mean?
You called him a little guy, and he said, I am not a little guy.
Okay, well, I mean, my husband's a little guy. He's short.
Could your husband call in, and we're going to weigh Pete and your husband just to see who is less little guy?
He's not heavy, is what I think you meant. Yes.
He ain't heavy.
He just doesn't look like he would be a big eater. He's Pete Zimmerman.
But he did have a veggie burger, I think.
Yeah.
Yes, he did. So I take my comment back, Pete. I'm so sorry.
I don't know that you are.
You don't have to follow.
Not really.
Let's hear the top six.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks.
With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
Item number one, Blackhawks win. I didn't have a chance to bring this up yet, but the Blackhawks beat the Pittsburgh Penguins 6-3 last night. Andy's still in the midst of the champagne-soaked celebration.
Yeah, it burns the eyes. It burns the eyes. It's better to drink.
I'm happy for the boys.
Yeah, me too. I mean, it was getting ugly.
Everybody from a Rocky, a John, and a Jay, all the way down to guys we don't know and people we don't know who are there
in
the organization.
They're 1-0 when Andreas Martensson scores.
Exactly. That's the point. Who scored the other goals?
Saad, DeBrinket, Johnny Taves. It was
spread it around.
Yeah, they spread it around. Marcus Kruger.
I was tied up through most of the evening. I turned it on. It was 4-3, and I called Comcast. I said, this has to be wrong.
Your score bug's wrong.
Nice job, Blackhawks. Next. Mayor Rahm Emanuel floated a Port District site on the far southeast side as the possible location for a Chicago casino if state lawmakers finally grant the city the long-sought gambling palace. Time will tell on this. It wasn't Rahm's original idea. FYI, for those of you who hate the idea, for those of you who love the idea, it wasn't Rahm's original idea. for this casino to make it work, the fallacy here, and we'll take this up with the mayor on Monday, one casino is not going to erase the $100 billion in debt the state has, let alone the
and
city.
And to put it down where he wants to put it on the southeast side, it would be in direct competition with right across the skyway from all of the Indiana casinos. So in terms of competition, I would think that'd be a bad place for Chicago because people could just go 5 minutes over and be at the Horseshoe and other places.
Well, but the other things he said yesterday, Steve, is that he wants us to be able to smoke marijuana as well. So maybe with a combo of the marijuana and the casino.
Well, but here's the problem with that. And I don't know a lot about weed because I've never smoked weed, but I know people who are very, very weed heavy like you three. The fact of the matter is they'll be too tired to go to the casino.
What will happen is they'll be too confused at the blackjack table. It'll be a terrible experience.
What's everybody yelling about, man?
Do I hit? Do I stay? What do I do?
No hitting.
Like, oh, God.
Next, CTA approved contracts to pave the way for a $2.1 billion Red Purple Line modernization. Is this the O'Hare deal? They're fixing up the O'Hare? What's the Red Purple Line? Where's it
red
going?
And purple. Red purple is goes the 95th Street.
Red is O'Hare.
And Edmondson is
purple. Go Cats.
Yep.
Purple go Cats. Oh, that would make sense, wouldn't it?
Yeah. And those stations do need some renovation. Central is terrible over there.
Why aren't we doing like a $40 billion renovation to make the airport trip 3 minutes faster?
Elon Musk is doing
there
that.
There has been a lot. I give credit to the mayor and the mayor before him, but they have continued this project of revitalizing and renovating L stops along the way. So you see some of the Red Line stops. I think the Wilson stop and some others are beautiful.
Yeah, the Wilson stop.
It's unbelievable.
Great.
I remember the Wilson stop being like, hide. The doors are about to open. Hide. It's not that way anymore.
I know a lot about this.
Same with the other parts of it.
I know a lot about this, having not ridden the L, but I drive by the Wilson stop occasionally, and I tell you, from my car, it looks fantastic.
Pete Zimmerman is an avid Red Line user, so maybe we can ask him if it needs renovation.
I'm old school.
He just nodded his head yes.
Steve, you've never been on the CTA?
I've never ridden the CTA in Chicago. Not a single time.
Ooh, remote. I smell a remote.
I think we need to put
on a subway. I was on a subway in New York this summer. I've just never been on CTA.
The Brown Line goes in a loop, so we could just do a show from there.
Yeah. We could put you on the holiday train and let you go.
Or we could do it from the Tahoe.
And we could.
What are you doing this Saturday, Steve?
What's going on Saturday?
I would like to invite you to take the CTA holiday train, which will be running on the Red Line
on
Saturday.
Oh, there you go.
Not a bad idea.
We should
I'd
do
go.
It as a group. We should all go.
I would go, but I would be concerned about my security. I had no idea you were a little guy. And I'm a little concerned.
Such a little guy. I'm a little guy.
Next. Federal prosecutors announced yesterday they'd reached a deal with the publisher of the National Enquirer, that's American Media, Inc., which admitted to paying off a Playboy model, that would be Miss McDougal, in 2016 in order to protect Mr. Trump's presidential campaign. Now, to be fair, Andy, this borders on sports.
It does.
Because she was paid to provide fitness columns and advice to the Enquirer. Because when you turn to the Enquirer, the average Enquirer reader turns to the Enquirer and says, how can I get in better shape? Yeah. How can I possibly get tightened up and more fit?
I did not understand the depths of the relationship between the president and the National Enquirer.
Yeah.
A couple years ago, I think it was 2012, 2013, he was writing first-person columns for the National Enquirer.
With the
president of the United States.
With the it's sort of the New York Times. They don't do the picture. They do the drawing. It's like with a sketch Trump head.
I can't believe that. And think about how many denials there have been from that company, from its owner, from its president. We never paid anybody off. This is fake news. How many times did they say it was fake news? And now they turn around, they're like, oh, we did. We were just lying.
Welcome to the party, everybody.
Wow.
Next. Nancy Pelosi is in as House Speaker. The vote won't take place till January, but after she and the president mixed it up in the Oval the other day. She secured votes she didn't have before. So it is a lock, as she promised, whether you like it or not. Next. Vitamin Water is going to pay somebody $100,000 to go without their smartphone for 365 days.
It's impossible.
Not going to happen.
If you own a smartphone, you are of the mind that you have to have your smartphone. Now, the only one who could win this would be my mother. My mother got a smartphone, gave it up. A little while later, she got, put your phone down.
Okay.
I got a smartphone, and she occasionally will check it. Yeah, like when I'm texting. Like I texted her once, hey, Mom, I'm on fire. And 3 days later, she got back to me.
I've gotten completely addicted to the screen time feature on the phone. That's new with the and I am now checking it to, and I have given myself personal goals to wean myself off.
Do you look into a mirror to see if you're in the mirror? Because looking at the, looking at the screen time number while
you're... the screen,
it counts. I know, it counts. It counts.
Well, nobody has a landline anymore, so...
Well, listen to this, Mayor. Listen to this. Vitamin Water is going to pay $100,000 if you can go without your smartphone. You enter by sharing on Instagram or the Twitter hashtag NoPhoneForever and hashtag contest. Vitamin Water is going to pick one person. Could be you, Mary, who will trade in their smartphone.
No way.
I love this. For a 2000s era calling only phone.
Yeah.
Oh,
so it's not even a, it's not even a, it's not even a, like a landline.
Yeah.
It's just a the crappy phone that you can't do anything on.
Yeah. Is it corded or cordless?
No,
no, it's cord. It's like a,
it's a mobile phone.
A flip phone?
Yeah, the original
flip phone.
It's like the old Motorola StarTAC.
Oh,
Justin.
Probably T9 texting. Yeah.
Oh, I'll do that.
6 months, you get $10,000. Full year, you get $100,000. Here's my question: does somebody from Smartwater live with you? How do they know you're not lying?
Yeah, exactly. How many people are they going to pick?
I mean, just one. I got burner phones all over Illinois. I mean, I don't, come on.
They're going to have their eyes on you. We can see everything now.
It would take more than $100,000 for me to do that.
I will give you $20 if you don't look at your phone for the rest of the show. You give your phone to Mary right now. If you don't touch your phone between now and 10 o'clock, I'll give you $20. I'm kidding.
I'm already going to the shakes.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah,
$20, man.
I do it for $7 because I owe Pete $7.
And I have not had cash
in 4 days.
With your allergy to cash, the only way Pete's going to get paid is if he asks me for the money. That's your top six.
That's it.
That's all today for the top six and six.
No more.
Sponsored by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60 Minute Men.
5 seconds left in the losing streak. Hayden at the hawk line with a puck. Lifts it through the air down into the Penguin zone, and it is over. The longest losing streak of the season is history. The Blackhawks are back into the win column with their 10th win of the season. They beat the Pittsburgh Penguins here tonight, 6-3.
I wanted to talk to Nick DiGilio because after the game last night, we shared a good cleansing cry. We just held each other and rocked back and forth after the Hawks won 6-3. Hi, buddy.
Yeah. Hi. It was still a little scary, though, man.
Well, that's what's funny. I was saying this tomorrow. 4-3, 4 minutes to go. In the old days, you'd go, obviously it's over. You guys want to leave? I mean, they're going to win. Last night, 4-3, you're going, oh, God, please, just hold on.
I felt the same way. The last 4 minutes felt like an eternity. And when they pulled the goalie, I was a nervous wreck. The other thing that was amazing about that, Crow played his butt off last night.
He did.
He had 43 shots thrown at him, and he stopped three of them. Or he got three of them went through. He stopped 40 shots last night.
Yeah.
Incredible.
And a lot of great saves. A lot of crazy great saves.
And key saves. Key saves, you know?
A lot of them, though, are those kind of make me nervous where they're outside of their little goalie area, and I'm like, get back there. Like
Crawford deserves credit. This is a little inside baseball for hockey, but and let's go live to Andy now, goalie pets. He used to scare the hell out of me whenever he'd handle the puck because he was clearly the worst goalie in the league for it. He's worked on that really, really hard. He's doing a great job of passing.
Yeah.
Great job of puck handling. Great job of knowing where he is on the ice.
Yeah, he and Jimmy Waite work very hard on that before and after practice sometimes. And a lot of times during training camp, and this year was a little different, obviously, with him being a little injured. But, yeah, he does handle the puck a lot better.
So as we continue with hockey talk, how are you, Nick DiGilio?
Me? Oh, I'm good. Yeah. I'm fine.
Okay, well, it's not an accusation. I'm just wondering how you are. Now, you didn't go to a movie with your mom and dad. Are you guys fighting? This is like, what, two out of the last three weeks?
The last 2 weeks, nothing came out.
Okay.
But now this week, there's an overabundance. And as we get from now till January, there's too many movies.
Too many.
They do this every year.
Now there's too many.
Nick just I mean, Nick all Nick does want, Nick eats and sleeps to, eats and sleeps at the theater. He goes in the theater, then he comes to do the radio show, then he goes back to the theater, and it's the only way you can get them all in.
I'm lucky in that right on my coffee table right now, I have two giant stacks of screeners so I can watch them in my house. And I have been doing that to catch up. But it's just ridiculous. Every year they backload the year, and it's all because of awards season. They want everybody to see all the serious movies and have them fresh in their mind while they're voting because, you know, people who usually vote for the Academy Awards have a pretty short memory. So, you know, they release, like, there's going to be 20 movies released between now and January. It's going to be crazy.
Screen Actors Guild theaters, or screeners, should be coming any second now, right?
Yeah, well, I've had the For Your Consideration screeners. They started coming in late October. And I've got, like I said, I have...
But that's for everything, right? I'm talking about the specific SAG screeners?
The SAG screeners are... Yeah, those are coming out. Well, the SAG nominations already were announced.
Right.
They were announced the day before yesterday.
Right.
But, you know, award season is insane. If you're a movie critic or you want to be a completist and see all the movies that are going to be considered for the awards, it's damn near impossible at this point because it's just crazy how many movies are released in, like, the last 2 months of the year, beginning of January.
All right, let's go. I want to ask you about The Mule, so let's go lightning round on the others. Vox Lux is what?
Is Natalie Portman's latest movie, where she plays a sort of a punk singer who had a very big career as a teenager and is trying to make a comeback. That's what that is.
Danny Bonaducci in that?
No, Danny Bonaducci is not. It's actually a pretty good movie.
Okay.
And, the music is good. The songs were written by Sia.
Oh, well, so. Sure. She's one of the greats.
Yeah.
She's my favorite Sia. Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse?
Now, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse is one of these movies that has come out of nowhere. It's an animated movie about a bunch of Spider-Men in a universe, and like anybody needed another Spider-Man movie? No. Mm. And it was animated? No. This movie is getting some of the best reviews of the year, and it's going to be nominated for Best Animated Film of the Year, and everybody I know who's seen it loves it. I'm seeing it tonight.
Super Joe weighed in with he needed another one, so...
Oh, he did?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, I could use another three or four, Nick, so if you could get that done for me, I'd appreciate it.
Well, I'll tell you what, if this movie is as successful as the buzz has been around it, you'll have another one.
Wait a
for
minute.
Sure.
Yes. My 11-year-old son, is really into this movie. He says that this is the talk of all of the internet.
Are you Super Joe, possibly Spider-Man?
There are multiple Spider-Men. Yeah. I can neither confirm nor deny.
Mortal Engines?
A science fiction movie takes place in the future about a woman fighting a battle against London, which is now a predator city on wheels that runs people over.
Mm, yeah, you had me. I'm sorry. You lost me. It was a science fiction movie. What is Ben is Back?
Ben is Back is Julia Roberts' latest movie, and it's about her son comes back. He's a 19-year-old kid. He comes back, and he's having trouble with addiction and drugs and things like that. Lucas Hedges plays the kid, and he also, that's right around Christmas time, and the movie takes place over a 48-hour period where he gets involved in some really underhanded activities and trying to remain sober and remain straight and keep his relationship with his mother, played by Julia Roberts. Julia Roberts getting a lot of great reviews for it.
I can't remember who I was talking to the other day. Somebody said Clint Eastwood looks really old in The Mule. You know why? Clint Eastwood is really old.
Yeah, he's like 86 or something, or 87.
And still making movies.
Movies.
I mean, The Mule, based on a true story of a couple that turned into drug mules. This is just about him, though, as the guy, right?
Yeah. He's facing foreclosure. He's broke. He's in a bad way. So he decides, you know what? I'll do some drug running for a Mexican cartel. And oddly, an 86-year-old doing drug running for the Mexican cartel doesn't go unnoticed. And Bradley Cooper, who's had a pretty good year, plays like the DEA guy who's trying to track him down. Lawrence Fishburne is in it. This movie was supposed to be released like in February or something, but Warner Brothers felt so strongly about it and the possibility that Clint could get some nominations that they pushed up the release date, and it comes out this weekend.
Has he won an Oscar?
Clint?
Yeah.
As an actor, no. As a director, yes. He won for Million Dollar Baby and for Unforgiven, but he's never won an Oscar as an actor.
If he wins, or if he's nominated for Best Actor, there's a very good chance he'd win. I don't care who else is in the category. Obviously, I don't know yet. The nominations haven't come out.
Yeah. I mean, there's a possibility. It's going to be a strong year this year for a lot of these categories, I'll tell you.
The Slapshot, January 8th, AMC Rosemont 18. That's the next chance for you to be in the film club situation. How do you get tickets?
You can go to amctheaters.com. $10. Parking is free. And we're also going to work out another deal with the Murray Brothers Caddyshack restaurant right down the street, because it went so well when we showed Scrooge. Everybody had a great dinner, and then we saw the movie. So we're going to partner up with those guys again at Caddyshack for a deal before the movie. And Slapshot, obviously, classic. One of the greatest movies ever.
You're becoming the king of Rosemont. Thank you, buddy.
Okay, man.
Let's do this. Headlines next, 720 WGN.
Oh, man, the snow is piling up. We're stuck here. We're stuck at... Hey, is that Brad Paisley? Yeah, that's Brad Paisley. He's stuck here, too. I'll have a blue Christmas without you. I'll be so blue, just thinking about you.
I'm going to try to help you out now. Oh, by the way, Jack Dodd is on assignment. He'll rejoin us at, what is it, Tuesday?
No, I'm not here on Tuesday. He's going to be on his regular scheduled time next Tuesday, and then he's off the following week, but we're off the following week, so that works out. And then he'll be back the 3rd of January.
And I have a very unique contract here. I make $4 for the entire year, but I have 47 weeks vacation. I found out I didn't use it all, and I was trying to figure out a way to burn a few days before the end of the year, like all of you. If you have a horrible company policy that locks you down and can't roll it over to the new year.
Sometimes you've got somebody that works with you that started suggesting earlier in the year that you start taking the days off.
But you know, why didn't you suggest that?
I did suggest that. We made a little mention of this yesterday on the show as well when you were trying to squeeze in a vacation day that I was very frustrated with a lot of the staff.
Told you, nobody is more disappointed in me than me.
Yeah. So.
But I'm going to try to help you out now because I have a list of actual medical conditions that you may be able to use for the holidays.
Okay. Well, while you're going to do that list, I'm going to give away Brian Regan tickets for New Year's Eve at the Chicago Theater.
One of your favorite comedians.
That's right. Seventh caller. Tickets are on sale now at Chicago Theater Box Office and Ticketmaster.
Brian's great.
And if you don't win these tickets, you could always buy tickets to the Steve Cochran Show New Year's Eve. And that one's a little earlier. You'll be home by 10 p.m.
Right. And you can still tell people the next day you went out and tore it up. Eventbrite.com. 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 We're going to have a great time.
I believe
New Year's Eve
is the 18th annual.
It's a little nutty.
Which is funny because it's 2018. Sorry.
You'd be happy. Go ahead. You'd be happy because yesterday while you were out, we promoted the Tivoli show at least twice.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Appreciate that.
You don't even
have
to be here. We were like, you know what? You should go see Steve on New Year's Eve. It's going to be a great time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. By the way, is anybody on the show coming?
I know.
New Year's Eve's tough.
I haven't had a New Year's Eve off since 1999. Anybody feel badly for me?
Justin said they would go, except for Miles can't go see dirty comedians, though.
There are no dirty comedians. Miles can literally come to the show. As a matter of fact, send Miles without you.
Yeah, right.
Just send Miles out. All right, now make a note of these.
I can't miss Janet Davies.
Yeah, you're going to be home in plenty of time. Cleathrophobia. Cleathrophobia is the fear of being trapped. Now, think about this. Trapped with your family.
Ooh,
snowstorm comes in. Nobody can leave. This is Sandberg's worst nightmare because when people show up at our house for the holidays, we talk about this Thanksgiving.
Right, right.
You get wristbands.
You got to go.
You get wristbands, and the wristbands tell you what time you need to leave depending on the color.
Remember when you were going to Travis City this summer and it was going to rain all weekend, and then somebody said, oh, I think Mary Vanderbilt, you could play board games all weekend. I'm like, that's my worst. I don't want to have forced activity with people in one room.
Cleathrophobia, plus I don't know what the fear of board games is, but that's, I'm sure, something too.
Board games are great.
Oh, no, they are not, Mary. They are not.
How about ipavlopsychophobia? Anybody got that? Ipavlopsychophobia? Ipavlopsychophobia is a fear of having your picture taken.
Oh.
You know, there's always one person who goes, no.
And they
volunteer
to
take the picture.
Yep. Yeah, that's annoying.
Decadophobia, also pronounced decidophobia, but then it sounds fake. It's actually a real thing. The fear of making decisions.
Yeah. Mm.
You cannot do this during the holiday season. Somebody's got to make decisions.
Yeah.
That's Chidi on the show Good Place. If you watch Good Place, that's his thing.
Hey, that's
you
a problem.
Make decisions, yeah.
Anyone has difficulty making decisions, they can enlist me for help, and I will make the decisions for them.
That's a service. That's a good. You should
I'm telling you.
75 cents.
75 cents. You could do this as a business.
Yeah.
Consultancy, $5,000 a week.
Mm-hmm. It's like Lucy on Peanuts.
Yeah,
and it's not a. My sister sometimes will accuse me of lazily giving her the decision because I do it quickly, but that's not true. I just see the clear path instantly. So
Pedophobia is a fear of children. If you don't want a bunch of children around, if you don't want children around for the holidays, you're a terrible person. Auroraphobia, fear of the northern lights. I don't know why that would affect about four people.
Wow.
Cryophobia is fear of the cold. Yeah. So get on a plane.
A little bit of fear of that.
It's plenty cold right now, by the way. Yeah. Dendrophobia is the fear of trees. You're walking in going, the Christmas tree.
I thought fear of dandruff.
Yeah.
Dendra.
Oh, sorry.
Nomophobia is the fear of being unable to use your cell phone. It's a legitimate named phobia, the fear of being unable to use your cell phone. Wow. Like you're at.
Andy's got that.
Is there a cure for that?
Say you're at your parents' house. And you're at your parents' house, and their cell service sucks. The commercial's been made about a million times. That kind of thing. Deronophobia, the fear of opening gifts.
I get self-conscious about opening gifts, though. I don't love that when everyone's looking at you.
Yeah,
but because if you don't
fear,
because reactions.
You're uncomfortable.
You're very good at lying. You lie to me every day about how great the show was that day. So you could tell people you really like the gift that you don't like.
Yeah. Well, it's not because I even care what's inside. I just don't like everyone watching me.
How'd you get in the show business? Chinophobia, fear of snow.
Oh, I thought you were going to say chins.
Oh, I'm sorry. I pronounced it wrong. Chionophobia.
Jay Leno scares you the most because his chin is the most protruding.
The new Jay. Chionophobia, fear of snow. So there's a few. Just pick one. Yeah. Just pick one and you'll be fine. And you'll be able to use that as a legitimate medical reason. You don't even have to have a doctor's excuse. All right. Coming up, stand by. Quite a story in Rob Feeder's blog this morning involving the Tribune Publishing Company and payoffs. Payoffs are the hip thing. If you're not paying somebody under the table right now, you're not getting it done.
Cover it up.
And after 7 o'clock, Pat Brady will explain from a legal standpoint everything that could happen to the president and the various stories that are out today. I just think if 10 or 15 of the closest people to you in business are all going down, you got some problems.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
RobertFeeder.com. If you like a good media scandal, RobertFeeder.com reporting this morning on an NPR report. Congratulations to them that the Tribune did some undercover, behind-the-back, sleazy little payments to cover up Michael Farrow's alleged Jewish slur that happened at a high-end Chicago restaurant and was secretly recorded. Someone who was fired within 6 months of that period either got a hold of the recording or was at that meeting. And the Tribune Publishing Company is alleged to have made $2.5 million in hush money payments. Everybody's doing it. Hush money's hot. Hush money payments to keep this person from releasing that information.
The hard part about this story, Michael Farrow no longer with the Tribune Publishing, but the hard part is that, you know, for his tenure at the paper or at the publishing company, there were mass layoffs. A lot of people lost their jobs. A lot of people they talked about the changing landscape of news and digital, and we've got to reorganize our company. So to hear that there are hush money payments to the tune of $2.5 million, that's
a lot of jobs.
That's a lot of jobs.
Does hush money fall into the category of budget, or is that budgeted somewhere else?
Yeah, I don't know.
The payments were listed as a consulting fee.
Oh, consulting.
Yes. One of the places the accounts can hide it. Now, here's the part that is a little shady or incomplete, and I'm sure Feeder's working on this part of the story. California billionaire Eli Broad was allegedly referred to by Farrow as part of a, quote, Jewish cabal that ran Los Angeles. I'm here to tell you that, of course, that's offensive for someone in Farrow's position in particular to say it. That's not hush money. That's not a hush money statement. There has to be something
else. What's the context? There's probably much, much more. And the idea that somebody's putting a recording at a restaurant, upscale Chicago restaurant, who you having dinner with, that they're turning their phone recording on for that conversation.
I talked to Michael Farrow a handful of times. I don't know him, but there's rumors about anybody who achieves a certain level of success, and if you're around for a while, you can kind of tell which ones maybe are true. Farrow left just before sexual harassment allegations came to light and stepped down and took his money and went and ran. So this Tribune Publishing stuff, I don't know that any of it's going to fall back on him, but it's an interesting story because the Tribune Publishing Company obviously has a job to do things above board and be appropriate and be great journalists, and this is the type of shady nonsense, as you said, where great journalists are losing their jobs.
Losing their jobs.
And you have to pay hush money payments?
Rob Feeder's first line is He says, "Is it if it were possible to think any less of Michael Farrell?" That's what he says.
Yeah, and well, Feeder's great, obviously, and I don't say that just because I hope he writes something nice about me, because you know, he can do whatever he wants.
I think that sums it up.
So, all right, that's a little media scandal for you locally. And at 6:59, the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, that's where Steve will be next.
We've learned that federal prosecutors here in New York City, not Bob Mueller and his team in Washington, D.C., career prosecutors here in New York City, have evidence that the president of the United States committed a felony by ordering and paying Michael Cohen to break the law. How do we know that? They told that to the federal judge. Under the rules, they can't tell that to a federal judge unless they actually have that hardcore evidence. Under the rules, they can't tell that to a federal judge unless they intend to do something with that evidence. The U.S. attorney in Manhattan, a Donald Trump appointee, taking a page from Jeff Sessions' book, recused himself, leaving this case in the hands of the full-time career professional prosecutors. They are the ones who prosecuted Michael Cohen. They are the ones who told the federal judge that
I'm Sean
orchestrated these unlawful payments. They are the ones who made the agreement with AMI, the parent company of the National Enquirer, which ties a bow on all of this.
Judge Andrew Napolitano yesterday referring to the president as a felon. Look, you could be involved in a relationship and everybody else says, look, your girlfriend, your boyfriend, your husband, your wife is a disaster. And you don't believe it. So if you support President Trump, regardless of how much truth piles up, have at it. But the fact is, you cannot have this many people this close to the president on the verge of going to jail willing to say anything they need to either cut their sentence or not go to jail unless there's something there, which brings me to Pat Brady. And Pat is a former prosecutor when he's not talking to politicians. And Pat, let's start with what Napolitano said. Explain why the president is in such legal trouble here.
Well, I'll take one. Everything Napolitano said, I completely agree with, but there's something else.
By the way, Napolitano on Fox.
On Fox, yeah. That's, and Tucker Carlson's actually come off the reservation, too, with the president. But I think a point, too, that's been reported that he didn't discuss is the CFO of the Trump Organization is under an immunity agreement, meaning he is working with the prosecutors, too, yeah, to tell them everything they want to know.
Well, explain that part, too, because a lot of people take immunity agreements. When you take an immunity agreement, you're immune from prosecution most of the time. Now, I know there's different things. Manafort. Immune from prosecution. Why would anyone take an immunity agreement unless they felt something illegal had happened and they were in trouble?
That may not necessarily be true. You might just take an immunity agreement because when you're dealing with federal law enforcement, you want to make sure that anything you say or do, you might make a mistake, which could be interpreted as a false
statement. But you have to believe you have knowledge of something. Right?
Yeah. Or, yes and no. I mean, if I were advising someone, say, hey, if you're talking to the feds and you're talking about these deals, you better get yourself an immunity agreement just to make sure you're not going to get yourself in trouble. I can envision a scenario where you haven't done anything wrong. Or, although that being said, they don't typically give you that agreement until you do a proffer to offer what you know and what might be helpful.
So they won't allow you to be immune unless you have something that is of value in return.
Exactly. You don't just get it for free.
Michael Cohen sentenced yesterday 3 years. That's a big deal. You're going to prison for 3 years. That is Trump's personal attorney, regardless of what he wants to say about how he was just a mail boy or whatever he wanted to throw out. I mean, it's just indisputable. It's indisputable that he was Trump's guy. He is going away for 3 years. He has told Mueller things that we don't know yet. If you're Donald Trump, aren't you a little nervous?
You should be, but there's now four tracks to this investigation overall. There's the Southern District of New York, which is a very aggressive one of the top prosecutor's offices in the country that has Cohen talking, and they have the people from the Trump Organization talking. Then you have the Mueller investigation, which is looking at whether or not the Russians interfered or tried to interfere with our elections. We've already had indictments there. The middle part of that is, did the Trump campaign help? That's where you've got Flynn and Flynn talking probably a couple hundred hours with the prosecutors about what the transition team knew. And then you have the third tranche or the fourth tranche investigation is whether or not the president obstructed justice.
Pat, I'm always,
that's a lot of legal jeopardy, okay, potentially.
So a lot of this centers around the Trump campaign, and I think the National Enquirer stuff is interesting and relevant because it shows a pattern here of doing whatever it takes, even if it breaks the law, to win an election. These are cover-up, these are hush payments for the simple fact that if this came out, this would look bad and I probably wouldn't win. So put the money, find a way to hide this, whatever it is, to make sure these people don't tell their story. Right. And it's similar to even the other track, the Mueller investigation of when they start talking about collusion, whether or not you enlisted the help of a foreign agency or foreign government to help you win an election. So there are patterns coming forward. Should we take it that way?
Yeah, and that's what they'll try to prove. There's a big timeline somewhere in some prosecutor's office laying all this out and all the facts that relate to what they think may or may not have happened. But the charge, if it comes, would be a 371 conspiracy to defraud the United States. And if you look at the commentators now, you see people are saying it'd be a conspiracy to defraud the United States. I do want to say one thing that relates to politics. I think that the Democrats overplayed their hand on the first part of this Cohen thing because there is arguably somewhat of a defense based on what happened with John Edwards. So I think politically they just should have just sat back and wait till you get something more that people are more a campaign finance.
Wait, back up. John Edwards, explain what happened.
John Edwards was charged with a campaign finance violation, charged criminally because he had paid off. Remember, he paid off his mistress because she had a baby and all this stuff. And he was found not guilty. And there's a whole...
His mistress had a baby. Yeah. He also had a friend of his take the fall initially for that. This is while his wife was dying of cancer. Ugly story.
And his friends paid her off. But there's a distinction there. But it was enough to allow the president and his people, and smartly so if you're PR people, to muddle the message on campaign finance actually being something you should be charged criminally with. It's nonsense, and you should be, but that's what he's been able to do.
Can the president, can he sell to the public, maybe not to the prosecutors, but to the public, that, hey, I'm not a politician. Sorry I broke these rules. I didn't know these were rules.
Ooh, the ignorance of the law is no defense. Right, Steve?
Yeah. Yeah.
We watch Legal Bond together. We picked that up.
Yeah.
the image of the two of you on the couch sharing popcorn. No,
I would actually sit between Pat's knees and he'd do my hair while we watched it. But ignorance of the law is not a defense. That is a phrase that came up in the Cohen final verdict yesterday in the statements made in court as well. Ignorance of the law is not a defense. So how could they claim that on any level?
Well, you can always claim it and try to make that argument. Maybe see if a juror or a judge is going to buy, but it's not a...
All right, let me just fast forward here. I don't think the president's going to jail. There's a number of reasons why. I just don't think he's going to jail. We can get more into those as time goes on. However, at some point, is it crazy to think there's going to be a plea deal here struck where somebody goes to the president the same way the senators went to Nixon in 1974 and said, you've lost the Senate. You will be impeached. And Nixon said, okay, I'm out. A deal to resign the office to save some face, or to more importantly to Trump, to not go to jail or not have his kids go to jail.
I think if this does move forward and he's actually contemplating being charged, or they are, that's probably the likely outcome. But it's going to have to come politically, too. It's going to have to be Republicans going to him and saying this thing's up, just like they did with Richard Nixon.
And how do the people of Kentucky continue to put up with the fact that their senator, Mitch McConnell, a week after all this broke with Cohen, Friday will be a week, has not said a word?
Yeah, and listen, I'm a Republican, and the damage that the president, I'm sorry people get mad when I bang on Trump, but the damage he's doing to the Republican Party, we're getting to a point where I'm not sure how we recover for 2020 if he's still there, because we saw it here in Illinois. We've seen it all over the country. We had historic losses in the last election, and now we've got these criminal allegations out floating around. It's just not stuff that's going to allow us to be successful.
But you hear nonstop, and people will text in and talk about they don't care about all that stuff. They care about what he's doing, what he's getting done for the country. And he is doing things that he ran on, campaign promises. He wants to change the way that we do business with other countries. He wants border security and those kind of things. Well, that if he has success in that ways, if he gets his wall, do people say, I don't care? It's almost like with Clinton and Democrats back in the late 90s. I don't care what he does in his personal life.
Well, that'll get you 35%, which is a loss. But what happened up in Wisconsin and Michigan, too, relates to this. When the legislatures there try to take the powers away from the new Democrat governors, that does nothing but inflame the electorate to come out and vote. And if he doesn't win those two states, given the way the map shakes out, he doesn't win.
So when are the geniuses in the Republican Party going to step forward and go, this guy's killing us? How much more evidence do you need that he's really bad for what's left of the Republican Party?
I think you're starting to see that. Lindsey Graham and Bob Corker actually stepped up against him on what's going on in Saudi Arabia and his position that he's been not tough enough on them for killing the journalist. But they haven't done it yet. I thought when we had the losses that we had, the 40 seats in the House, that people would maybe start to stand up to him, but they're just not doing it now.
Yeah, this is not primary season. The hide-saving aspect of primary season, that's done. It's over. It's not going to come up for another year. Plus, before everybody's campaigning like crazy for Congress, for the House, and the Senate seats that are up. And it's a big Senate year, by the way, in 2020
as well.
It's a
huge year for the Democrats. The map's drawn for them.
That, I'm glad you said Democrats, because that is the greatest hope for the Republican Party. The Democrats are clueless. They can't decide who's in charge. They can't decide who they're going to run. They got 47 people. Yoda's running again. All of that is
problematic.
They said
the same thing about who is going to replace, who is going to run in 2016, right? I mean, remember, they're Donald Trump during the primaries. Everyone was like, what a joke. This Republican primary is a joke. Donald Trump won? I mean, there's still a long way to go on this.
Yeah, but our primaries, the way they're set up, are rigged for the incumbent. In fact, they're already trying to change the rules in New Hampshire. If you go to Iowa first, he'll have a little trouble in Iowa.
Right.
He'll cream it. He'll kill it in New Hampshire,
yeah.
And then goes to South Carolina, which
Democrat
is his own state.
But on the Democrat side, there's still a long way to go, and you can have 15, 20 candidates and still have a shot to beat Trump once they get a nominee.
But how can you not have a front runner? How can you not have two or three people that the entire public goes, well, that could be an answer?
They also changed the rules of the convention to make it more open,
yeah.
And I think the threat to the Democrats.
It's revisionist history, though, Steve. I mean, the Republicans didn't have. Everyone thought Jeb Bush was going to be the nominee.
Well, no, I'm not talking about the past. I'm talking about right now.
But that's what I'm saying. Like, even if you look back to even when Clinton ran in '92, Bill Clinton. And he wasn't the front runner. That wasn't it, Paul Tsongas and others.
Yeah.
I mean, it just seems like once we get closer, then it starts to feel like who's going to be the.
He got second place in New Hampshire and claimed victory.
Yeah.
Went on to win the nominee. Remember Jennifer Flowers,
the most valuable person on the planet. Coming up, stand by for that. More with Pat Brady and Senator Durbin before 8 o'clock on 720 WGN.
When the air turns cold and the fireplace starts to glow, it must be Christmas. Twinkle lights on the trees.
I think we all remember when I was part of 98 Degrees. Four guys with good hair and me.
Were they 98.6 degrees before
I was
left?
The 0.6. Yeah, I was the 0.6. A suburban Chicago couple has an amazing love story that's being turned into a Hallmark movie, and since it's all about Christmas, Christmas Pete is here.
And Hallmark movies.
Yes.
Catch the latest episode of Molly and Pete Save Christmas at WGNradio.com.
Tell me about Heather Krueger first.
Heather Krueger, I'll just say that Chris Dempsey and Heather Krueger are our MVPs for today. Mm-hmm. Christmas, is the season of giving. And Chris gave a part of his body to Heather.
That's where I was going with this. Heather needed a
liver transplant.
Okay. And Chris didn't know her.
Complete strangers overheard somebody at his work talking about it and butted in.
It was like, generous enough to say, well, maybe I should be tested.
I want to help this this stranger
mm-hmm.
out.
Let's go to the phone now and meet Chris and Heather. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning. How's it going? Thank you for having us.
Thank you for being here. Heather, importantly, how's your health now?
My health has been really good now. Few glitches here and there, but overall it's been so much better than it was before.
All right. So far, do we have the story correct, Chris? You're just a guy at work who decides maybe I can do the right thing?
Yeah. I was just sitting in a break room, and I overheard this kid talking about how his cousin needed this transplant. He was like seasonal help. He was home from college. It was during the holidays, and I overheard him talking about it, and, you know, I thought to myself, if I was in that situation, I would want someone to help me or my family.
And I don't need my whole liver. I just need some of it so I can share my liver.
55% ain't bad.
Yeah. So you get tested. You find out that you're a match. Is that how that works?
That is correct. Yep. I went through a whole bunch of testing at the UI Health in Chicago and found out I was a match.
All right, so deep romantic Pete, continue what happened from here, and let's see if Heather can keep from crying.
Well,
Chris called me about 3 weeks after I had found out that he was going to get tested and said, I got the lab results, I'm a perfect match. A week later, we met for lunch to discuss everything.
And you had never met before that.
No.
Do people typically talk with
each other?
Hey, Heather, do people typically talk with their donors like that?
Typically, no.
a lot of times, you know, I was on the waiting list. So if someone was to pass away and I got their liver, it would be up to that family whether they wanted to have contact. As far as living donors, again, that is up to the donor whether they want that contact.
So, Pete, is this a part of Tinder we're not familiar with? This sort of get together with your donor?
So you're lunching over talking about livers.
Yes, and the process, and I was just scared that he was going to get freaked out about the whole thing and, you know, change his mind, but he was the one that was reassuring me not to be nervous and that he was going to follow through with what he said he was going to do.
Now, Pete, when you heard about this story, you said we got to talk to these people.
I did.
Well, because...
Well,
it sounds like a Hallmark movie.
And I was like, wow, giving your...
his name is Chris, which is very Hallmark movie-ish.
Yeah, Chris Kringle could be. Yeah, exactly.
That's how they always have a character with a name that's Holiday.
And I was thinking, you know, blah, blah, who cares? Giving up liver? That's...
Who hasn't given up their liver for someone?
That's not the reason they're MVPPs. They're MVPPs because they turn the story into a Hallmark Christmas movie.
Yeah. Who fell for who first?
Well, I have to say that I was a chicken, so she made the first move.
But when you met, was there a spark right away? I mean, you know, you can tell us now, obviously, you know.
When I first saw her, I thought, obviously, she was beautiful, and she didn't look like somebody who was sick. I mean, she looked healthy, and...
Yeah, and I felt that there was a spark there. Obviously, a stranger who would do this.
Your hero. This is your knight in shining liver.
Right, right. He literally saved my life, my angel.
I mean, it's an amazing, amazing story.
So now, how long have you guys been together?
We've been married a little over 2 years now. So we've been together 3 years. Yeah.
What's it like? I mean, to have a Hallmark Christmas movie, which are special movies and they're romantic movies, but to have your story be told in this form, when you see that on the screen, what's your response to it?
It was totally surreal. We got to spend a few days on the set.
Well, I would hope so.
Filming, and it was just, like I said, it was surreal. Watching these actors like
portray us, and you know when we were going through everything, people would comment like, "Oh, they got to make this into a movie," but for it to actually happen was just—it's so wild, it's so weird to see, you know, my life on TV.
Amy Teagarden, I don't know the actress, but I'm looking at a picture of her now. Beautiful girl, and starred as Julie in Friday Night Lights. She's the daughter.
Yeah, the daughter.
Yeah.
She played you. That's pretty cool, right?
Yeah, I was.
We're actually watching that Friday Night Lights now. We decided that we got to watch the series.
That's a great series. Yeah,
yeah, but that's going to get weird. Yeah. You're watching it in reverse. Now you're watching her as a kid.
I know, and we're short on time, but they're also just started the process of adopting a child. So
how great is that?
I know. This is like one story better than the next.
One last question: What did the movie get right? What did it get wrong?
So. I wanted it pretty close to the real story, you know, because it said in the beginning inspired by true events. But they pretty much the only thing that was different was Chris didn't have a job interview overseas. He was working for the Village of Frankfurt.
How do you need to make this more interesting? How do you need
follow
to
the Hallmark
some writer,
formula.
Some producer goes, you know what we need? We need a guy to be overseas.
Yeah, that's the Hallmark formula. And there's Austin, big city, small town talk. That's Hallmark.
Right. Chris was a Marine, though, for 4 years.
Of course he was.
We do have, or my parents have a cabin in Michigan, so that part was true.
Your dad, I come at this from the dad of a daughter perspective. Your dad must love this guy. Like, I mean, because dads and son-in-laws, that's a tough hurdle sometimes.
Right, right.
I mean, dude.
My family, especially my sister, she did not like anyone I was with before. And Chris got the thumbs up. So
save your life, yeah.
You're a good man, sir.
The movie is called Once Upon a Christmas Miracle, and if you haven't seen it, they're rerunning it tomorrow at 4 o'clock, so set your DVRs if you haven't seen it.
Yep. Is it on demand?
You know, Hallmark is tough with their on demand. Okay. They want you to watch current movies.
So 4 o'clock tomorrow, get your Kleenex, get there and feel good about life. I mean, this is such a great story. Yeah. And one last piece for Chris, Marine. He does a part of a liver transplant, and the actor that plays him was on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
So he was not only a fake overseas guy, the actor that played him was like a superhero type. Yeah. So I'm really happy for you guys. It's an amazing story, and I hope you continue to have a happy life together, and good luck with that baby.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
Yeah, God bless you. That's Hold on one
story.
Second.
What a great story.
And after all that, we're going to give him a pizza. Ah, Pete, you've done it again.
Now the hope is in the sequel that they'll have this interview will be part of the sequel on the Hallmark.
From an overseas radio station based in Brussels.
Brussels talk show.
Come back with more with Pat Brady in a second at 720 WGN.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
Pat Brady's here. Pat, what's the name of that company of yours?
Next Generation Strategies. Thank you.
And the Lincoln Forum is a website you should check out regularly for actual adults, grown-ups, talking about politics, adults screaming at each other.
LincolnForum.org.
What's going on in Springfield during the lame duck? I'm barely hearing a quack.
A lot of behind the scenes. I think we're going to see a lot of activity in the next session because I think people are actually going to try to get along, get some things done, probably a cannabis bill, maybe some kind of revenue, maybe a capital bill.
Somebody asked me the other day, is there not one compelling Republican in a city of 3 million people that could eventually run and win as mayor of Chicago? Would that happen in our lifetime?
Well, it's a nonpartisan election. But yeah, I always thought Ron Gidwitz, who's now the ambassador to in the Belgium. But it's tough. We only have, 10 or 11% that Republicans.
A compelling Republican. Not just any Republican.
Well, it wasn't so long ago. I mean, Jack O'Malley was state's attorney. We had a county board president.
And some would argue that Mayor Daley, the son, was more Republican than let on.
Yeah, they say this is a blue state. To me, the Democrats are much more, Mike Madigan's much more conservative than the National Democratic Party is, for sure.
And speaking of Madigan, things are going well for him, I hope.
No, the four leaders, the governor and the four leaders had dinner the other night. I was out with Jim Durkin, who's the minority leader for the Republicans. They said it was productive. I think they really do want to get some things done.
And what would be the first two or three things on the agenda?
I would imagine for the governor, it's going to be revenue. He ran on a tax increase. He made a lot of promises on social services and things. We need to balance the budget. But the mayor's actually thrown a little bit of wrench into it because he's talking about pensions.
That whole thing that happened yesterday, is it a done deal that he said there's a package that's going to be in Springfield, and they talked about, and because of the relationship between Pritzker and Manuel, are we going to see those things move forward in Springfield?
I think Pritzker said he's not interested in getting the issue is the pensions, which are bankrupt, basically. The pensioners get a 3% cost of living every year compounded, which we can't afford. And then what the mayor was saying, get rid of that, but you have to amend the Constitution to do that, right? And then exchange for the graduated income tax, which you also have to amend the Constitution to do. So it sounds like a pretty good deal, but I'm not sure if the governor's going to go along with it.
Come back with Senator Durbin in just a second.
Instead, what the president is telling us now is we have to shut down our government if he doesn't get $5 billion for a wasteful, ineffective border wall. We need modern drug technology to stop the drug cartels from importing the poison that's killing our kids, not a medieval solution like a wall from sea to shining sea.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
Senator Durbin joins us. Merry Christmas to you.
Hi, Steve. How you been?
I'm fine. How are you?
I'm doing just great.
Well, I hope you have a great Christmas. I'm not sure we'll be connecting before then, so let me get that on the table. And also, I was curious to ask you about President Bush. Is there anything you haven't been able to say about him and remembering him?
Well, I'll tell you, it was a great ceremony, a real tribute to him. I always think, Steve, you know, we should remember that he got his training as a Navy pilot at Navy Pier.
Yep.
They used to have a training facility out there, and that's where this 19, 20-year-old volunteer showed up to learn how to be the youngest aviator, one of the youngest in World War II. And there's a great book called Flyboys, which I recommend to your listeners if they're interested, by a fellow named Bradley, that tells the story of his mission where he was shot down.
Right.
It was a suicide mission. They were flying right into the enemy's guns and eventually caught up with them. But I left reading that book with nothing but the highest respect. We could have disagreed on a couple political issues, but what a great man.
And incredible that there's footage of him being rescued.
Isn't that something?
Yeah.
To think that he bobbed around out there in the ocean for 4 hours and somebody had the presence of mind to pull out an old camera and to take footage of that. That's an amazing piece of film.
Yeah. All right, before we get to the shutdown and Trump and the horrible Saudi story that continues, The Farm Bill, reality now?
Yes. Finally, with an overwhelming bipartisan vote, good bill. It doesn't address the real concern farmers tell me, and that's the tariffs. They're wondering when they're going to end and what impact they're going to have on our reputation as traders in the world. These farmers have worked for generations to not only grow the best corn and soybeans and everything else, but to be reliable traders. And now a tariff war has that in doubt. They want to see that come to an end soon. But the bill passing is a helping hand.
The government shutdown is always something that sounds selfish, and it hurts people. It's going to hurt the Secret Service, for that matter. And people, even for a few days, that have to go away without a paycheck retroactively, maybe they get caught up. But it's a big deal to take people on government salaries and take their money away during the holiday season. Going to happen or not?
I'm afraid the president said it will happen. It's totally unnecessary. And you made a good reference. Think, when you go through the airports, about the men and women who are searching through our luggage and
Keeping us safe
to make sure people don't have guns and bombs on them. They're going to still have to show up for work, even with a government shutdown, but without pay. And they'll be delayed in their pay. They'll eventually get it. We all know that. But here they are going to a holiday season with uncertainty about when they get their paycheck. This is totally unnecessary. And I hope the president reconsiders it. This $5 billion wall is not the best way to keep our border secure. When I asked the experts, including in his own administration, they never mention a wall. They mention technology and personnel. I'm willing to put the money on the table for that, and I think both parties will.
Here's the thing. $18 billion was the original ask. Oh, by the way, Mexico's not paying for it. $18 billion was the original ask over 10 years. I did the math on this, Senator. I think you and I talked about this at one point, and I'm not kidding. We ran the numbers on this. That's $1.8 billion a year. You could literally hire a border agent and station them every 300 yards for all 900 miles. It'd be the greatest job fair ever, and you have had human beings in place of the wall, which would be a more effective way to do it if, in fact, you were going to spend the money.
Of course. This is a campaign promise. The president created this image of this wall from sea to shining sea and told us Mexico would pay for it. And it was really a symbol of his getting tough at the border. But it isn't a practical way to keep us safe. Let me give you an example. We have all these drugs, primarily fentanyl, coming across that border and through many other ways into the United States, killing almost 30,000 people last year from a fentanyl overdose. And we know that they're coming in through cars and trucks primarily. Currently, we are only screening and scanning 1 out of 5 of these cars and trucks. We can do better. And when I asked the people this week from the agencies, how much would it cost to put these scanners so that every car and truck is scanned for illegal people or contraband or guns or drugs? And they said $300 million. And I said, that is a far cry from $5 billion. Let's do it. And you'll get strong bipartisan support to do it. So I wish we'd take that approach, which is more practical and more effective.
Donald Trump tweeted seconds ago, obviously listening to the interview. I was a little earlier this morning. Tweeted, I often stated one way or another, Mexico is going to pay for the wall. This has never changed. Our new deal with Mexico and Canada is so much better than the old costly anti-USA NAFTA deal that just by that money we saved, Mexico is paying for the wall. Is that true?
Well, I can tell you this. I voted for NAFTA, took some grief for it. It wasn't perfect, and I was happy to see an effort to redraft it, renegotiate it. It was 25 years long overdue, and I thought it was the right thing to do. But it has nothing to do with paying for a wall. The president is trying to put these two things together. Maybe they're together in his mind, but the Mexicans have just said flat out, we aren't paying for your crazy wall, and I can understand that. They will cooperate with us, though, when it comes to the drug interdiction that I've talked about, and when it comes to holding those who are trying to cross into our border and in a safe situation, even offering them jobs. The Mexican government said, if you're one of these immigrants coming to the U.S. border, we'll give you jobs in certain parts of our country if that's what you're looking for. So there are ways they can help us, but the wall is not the way to do it.
Senator Durbin, the Washington Post said in an op-ed about negotiations and the Democrats' stance on this, on border security. You're for border security. You're not for the wall. But why not negotiate and go to Trump, who's known to be a deal maker, and say, okay, if you want a wall, then we want a path to citizenship for Dreamers, other issues that are important to the Democratic
Party. We had that deal, right?
Well, we did. We offered it to the president, and I did too. As crazy as I thought the wall was, under certain conditions, I signed up for it. If we took care of DACA, Dreamers, and several other parts of the immigration plan, it was a bipartisan offer to the president, and he rejected it in February. He could have had it. I mean, and this was before this last election. And now he's in a predicament with the Democrats soon to take over in the House. They're not going to vote for his wall. If he wants to sit down and talk about immigration reform, I'm there in a split second. At the current time, though, there's no reason for us to shut down this government and to create all of the problems that come with it.
Pat Brady's here. You got a question for the senator?
Hey, Senator.
Yep, let me get your mic on. There you go.
Hey, Senator, how you doing?
Good, Pat. How are you?
Great. Hey, please tell me we're going to get tough on the Saudis.
I think we are. You know, I was part of a dozen members of the Senate, Democrats, Republicans, 2 weeks ago, brought in with the head of the CIA and two of the top analysts, the smartest people in Washington when it comes to the Saudi kingdom. We were in that briefing, and all the leadership was there, McConnell, Schumer, and the rest. We were in there no more than 10 minutes till we all looked at one another and said, well, of course the Crown Prince knew about this. I mean, he had the highest levels of his own personal security guard who were involved in this escapade, and there's evidence of communications back and forth that could never have escaped his attention. I think he designed it, approved it, and was told afterwards when it was done. And take it from Lindsey Graham, there may not have been a smoking gun, but there was a smoking saw at the end of this story. The net result of it is an overwhelming vote yesterday against the U.S. supporting Saudi involvement in the Yemen war, and I think we're raising serious questions, long overdue, about our relationship with the Saudi kingdom.
So is this possibly the crack in the wall, not the one Trump wants, but the wall that's been around Donald Trump protecting him in some way? Because after the Cohen deal and the sentence yesterday and everything that could be in the Mueller report, we have a constitutional crisis we're living in right now. It's just a matter of timing when it fully comes to fruition. Is there any sense that the Republicans in the Senate feel the same way? Because I'll be honest with you, Senator, and I think you'd agree with this statement. I don't care if the president's Republican, Democrat, Independent, or Martian. They need to not be a criminal.
Well, of course, and everyone needs to be held accountable. No one is above the law. It's an old cliche, but it gets right down to the truth of the rule of law. Two or three of the most outspoken Republican critics are retiring. We're only days away from Jeff Flake being gone, Bob Corker being gone, and, of course, with John McCain's absence, which is a real loss to us in terms of an independent maverick voice who would one day jump all over the Democrats, the next day jump all over the Republicans. We're missing that, and I think you have to be honest. As you look at the developments with Michael Cohen, this Mueller investigation is moving forward at a pretty fast pace now. Some 33 to 35 indictments, seven people who have pled guilty, another one or two been found guilty at trial. What we can do and should do is to step aside and let him complete this investigation without any political pressure, and then let his report become public so the American people can reach their own judgment. I trust Mueller. He's a Republican. He was a U.S. attorney. He was also a Marine Corps veteran in Vietnam, headed the FBI for 10 years, strong bipartisan vote to extend his term at the FBI. This man, I think, is a good, reputable, professional prosecutor. I'll stand by his findings, whatever they are.
Just based on feel, do you think that Donald Trump finishes a first term?
Hard to say, Steve. It really is.
Well, just the fact that it's hard to say, right? I mean, the fact that you can't say that it's not guaranteed.
The Constitution has a process here, and it is a high bar. It's 67 votes in the Senate for impeachment. And what I've said to my Democratic friends is, let's get on to the business of governing this country, passing legislation that helps people. Let's not get mad or get even. Let's get the job done, and let's let the Mueller investigation be completed in due time and decide what the next step may be. This administration needs to be held accountable for its management of the government and its expenditure of tax dollars, but we shouldn't wake up every morning focused on that bright, shiny object called impeachment. That may or may not be in our future. Let's get our job done now.
Yeah, well, impeachment, as Pat Brady said a million times, impeachment's very bad for the country, but at some point the lines cross between the guy in the White House is worse for the country than impeaching him and removing him from the White House, and we're not there yet.
We'll see what happens. Remember, the organization Move On was created and named because the American people during the Clinton impeachment said, would you please move on, Congress, and get on with the business of this country? That is the overwhelming sentiment until it reaches a point there is no choice.
On a much happier note, I hope you have a great Christmas. Will you be here or there?
I'm going to be in Chicago with our son and new daughter-in-law.
Excellent.
With a baby on the way, a new grandbaby on the way, and we're looking forward to it over at Old St. Pat's for Midnight Mass. It'll be or the 5 o'clock version of Midnight Mass on Christmas Eve, so I'm looking forward to Christmas in Chicago.
And give your son and your daughter-in-law all the best. She's a great lady.
Will do.
All right, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
See you later.
Pat.
See you. And let's do this. News next. And thank you, Pat Brady, as always.
Always.
See you next week on 720 WGN.
See you, Pat.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Dean Richards joins us from Channel 9.
Citizens of the world.
Some of the world's greatest entertainers are here tonight.
Ladies and gentlemen, may I present to you.
And tonight, guess what? It's going to be Dean.
Yeah, honey, you know I love you more than one night show. Yeah.
Morons! Just a couple of morons! That's what people tell me, and I say, no, you're misunderstanding the title. Dean, it's Moron Entertainment.
That would be a good theme song, though. Morons, just a couple of morons.
Well, that could be the opening number for the Moron
Awards.
Get
John DeCoss on that?
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
Moron.
Yeah. He'll be in tomorrow.
Just morons.
We're going to have to set aside our...
Schlemazel.
I feel that feels familiar.
This is working. Yesterday, Justin was very excited and kept promoting that he was an honorary moron.
Yeah, Justin's a little too excited.
We need to find a way to, like, because it wouldn't be tap you on each shoulder on the top of your head. Some way to make you a moron.
Just maybe just one bop on the head.
Pie in the face.
Pie.
Or maybe we could get one of those boxing gloves on the end of a spring.
Yeah.
Oh. That's much more comedic.
I have been knighted. I've been booped.
All right, so we got a lot of important show business news to discuss here, including, am I the only one that finds the Ellen game show uncomfortable and how much she enjoys torturing people? Am I the only one that finds that uncomfortable?
I've only seen it one time, but I agree with you completely.
She just is gleeful when people are falling out of the sky, crawling around. And
nothing more entertaining than the potential of debilitating injury.
By the way, she and I used to talk all the time. All the time.
What happened?
I don't know. But I lost touch with her like 10 years ago, and we really haven't reconnected. I don't remember her being mean.
She may have heard you didn't like your show.
Yeah, she brought up, I have a concept for a game show, Steve, where I will torture people. And I went, don't ever call me again. Turns out she took me seriously.
Did you used to make her dance when she would come in the studio?
No, but I understand why she's tired of that. Is she going to quit her show?
She's hinting at it. She did an interview with the New York Times where she said she just signed an extension for the daytime talk show until the year 2020. But she says that may be it after that. This is something that I found interesting, that she's getting tired of putting on the Ellen persona. Isn't that weird?
It's weird that she would say it out loud.
To say it
out loud. As opposed to say it at home.
I mean, I guess when you go on the, you know, if you're doing a show, if you're on the air, whatever, you're slightly different than in real person. But to say that I'm sick of this, you know, very popular persona that people seem to like. I'm tired of being nice.
Yeah and I'm tired of putting on a fraud every day. That's the way it reads.
Yeah.
She was great at Comedians in Cars. She sat down with Jerry Seinfeld.
She's great. And
I thought you saw a different Ellen in that episode. Where I was like, I was interested. I was like, oh, that's interesting. That's not how she's like on the show. So maybe there is some validity to that.
Yeah, but poorly put.
I believe that. Because when I'm not on the air, when I speak to people, I usually do it in an operatic singing style. If I'm at McDonald's or the Jewel.
Right.
And where is the lettuce?
Yes, and then Dean has a manservant who goes and finds the lettuce.
You tell my butler to go get it.
What is the Toy Story Hotel?
It's the Disney company has just announced that they're going to be opening up a hotel in Tokyo that will be themed for the movie Toy Story. So when you check into a room, like you could check into Andy's room, for example, and it'll be the hotel room will be just like Andy's bedroom.
There's too much of this thematic stuff. All these pop-up bars in town. And
if you're with Abigail and she likes Toy Story, that is awesome.
It's a home run.
Yeah, you're
it's
in Woody's room or something. That's pretty cool.
Interesting you say that, because in Shanghai, they already have a Toy Story hotel themed the very same way. And when you go there, you can choose whether you want to stay in the Buzz Lightyear wing or the Woody wing.
You know what we need?
That's so cool.
I just think it's funny that when you call a hotel,
the Woody
and
wing.
Say, I would like to stay in the Woody.
Yeah.
Aren't most wings with the Woody wings?
In hotels, yes.
Yeah. I what you need is an Elmo's World Hotel. Because you, if it's an Elmo's World Hotel, I'd have a suite. You know,
you should take Abigail to Sesame Street Place, which is in New Jersey.
Yeah. Been there.
It's there.
Not with her.
Yeah,
I went on my own.
Yeah.
If you do that,
that was weird.
I'm going to hire a documentary crew to follow you if you do that. By the way,
yeah, well, I'm telling you, nobody appreciates how good an actor Mr. Noodle is. I'm telling you right now. Dude's out there.
I think there's one of those Sesame Street ones in Aruba or something. There's one in a nice warm climate.
Yeah.
Well, that'd be better.
Family. Yeah, because then you could be beaching and there might be some golf free to play.
Still to come, Miley Cyrus, Lil Wayne. Oh, Lil Wayne. And, man, there's a ton of year-end lists.
Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees were announced this morning.
Oh, and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame inductees were announced this morning, I've heard.
Yeah.
all of that coming up on More on Entertainment.
You'll be calling his name. Oh, 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 oh. Dean Richard, the entertainment editor, Channel 9.
Dean would be upset if I didn't remind you that he will be on stage New Year's Eve, the Tivoli in Downers Grove. I believe I'll be there as well. Steve Cochran's New Year's Eve for people who can't stay awake until midnight. 7 o'clock, you're home by 10. Plenty of time to see the awkward smooch between Gian Greco and Janet Davies.
Dean, did you know this is the 18th annual New Year's Eve show?
I did not know that.
18 straight years. I give and I give and I give.
Glad I could be part of a landmark number like that.
Well, here's the thing. In 1999, I partied like it was.
Right.
And then after that, I said, I'm going to work forever on New Year's Eve.
You keep saying that you would be home in plenty of time, but is there an after party for this thing? What if you wanted to go out? What if you wanted to keep...
I remember vividly 3 years ago. No, I guess it wasn't that vivid. It was 4 years ago. Driving home from the Crystal Lake show. And... nobody on the road, but we had a killer show. Full house, places rocking. It's how glamorous show business is. I'm driving home, I'm going, God, I didn't even eat. I'm kind of hungry. Finding the only Taco Bell that was open.
There's the after party.
Going through the drive-thru. That was the after party.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Not,
who's in?
I'm not going to be. If there is an after party, I'm telling you right now, I can't go.
Mike, is your hip is bad or what?
No, my New Year's tradition. I have to get back to the city because I like to ride around on the CTA for a penny all night.
Oh, sure. That's right. That's right. And eventbrite.com for tickets. We'll have a great time out
event,
at the
what is that? Event?
Eventbrite, B-R-I-T-E.
.com.
All right. Who's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
First timers for nomination, Def Leppard, Roxy Music, and Stevie Nicks. She's already in with Fleetwood Mac.
But I like her very much.
Now goes in solo. Second year of eligibility, The Cure and Radiohead.
Mm-hmm.
Third year, this is the most controversial one, third year of eligibility, Janet Jackson.
Yeah. Now, why is that controversial?
If you're nasty.
Because it took 3 years.
Well, and people are saying she's not a rock and roll artist.
What?
That it's R&B, it's dance music, it's...
Oh, so now we have to have an R&B Hall of Fame?
That's ridiculous. Well, Michael Jackson's in the Hall of Fame.
Michael Jackson? I mean, this happens every year when somebody like... I think Madonna got in a few years ago and everyone said she's not rock and roll. And the Four Tops and, you know, people like that saying those are not rock and roll artists.
Rhythm Nation alone should get her into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Yep.
Just the dance with the fingers and the whole bit.
Are any of these people that got in, were they on Wendy's list? Because Wendy takes this very seriously. Wendy's
Well, Wendy's
Snyder.
Music chick, she knows.
Yeah, so were these people, didn't she fight against The Cure, I thought, when the nomination?
Did she? I don't know.
I don't know.
I don't remember Wendy's stance against The Cure. Was that a telethon?
The Zombies also got in, by the way.
Yes!
Oh, yeah, they're rock and roll.
But here's what people on social media are saying. How can Janet Jackson be in and Jethro Tull is not? Iron Maiden is not? Warren Zevon is not in the Rock and Roll Hall?
Well, then start something to nominate him.
Nine Inch Nails, which I'm also sporting. I will be wearing in Downers Grove, by the way. I've got some lead.
You got Nine Inch Nails?
I'm going to have Nine Inch Nails that night.
I hate when your pantyhose run.
If you're going to be a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and you're going to get mad about that, there's so that ship has sailed. And
well, you got to run out of acts.
NWA's in the Hall of Fame. I mean, there's a lot in the Hall of Fame that's not rock and roll with an electric guitar solo.
So rock just, and roll was rock and roll was a blanket term for great artists.
Yeah, Janet Jackson deserves to be there.
Of course she does. Outrageous. Miley Cyrus, what?
She, in an interview, talked about some appearances on television. She's going to be hosting Saturday Night Live this weekend, and among what sounds like will be a highlight moment. She's going to do a duet of the classic John Lennon song, Happy Christmas, War is Over, with Sean Ono Lennon.
Oh, that's cool. That's a great thing.
John Lennon's son. I think that's going to be very cool.
That's Saturday Night Live Saturday?
Saturday Night Live
this
coming,
musical guest,
ironically,
right?
Saturday night.
Is she hosting as well?
I think she's the musical guest with Mark
Ronson. Yoko is hosting.
I think Matt Damon is the host.
Typical Yoko. You're right. Typical Yoko ruined Saturday Night Live. Remember when she did it?
Oh, man.
Lil Wayne in concert?
Lil Wayne, just Little Wayne, as you
just called Lil Wayne, didn't I? Is Little Wayne coming to town? Is Small and Tiny Wayne coming to town?
Merry Christmas, Little Wayne.
Everyone, all of us. He's going to be doing a free show in Chicago. They haven't said where yet, but he is going to be doing a free concert.
Free.
It's part of his I Ain't Blank Without You tour. It's going to be Sunday, December 23rd.
Seems weird that he would say blank.
It's the 23rd, huh?
And it's the Sunday the 23rd, because nobody's busy a couple days before Christmas. If you want to get tickets, you have to subscribe to the music streaming service Tidal first. And then you can get your tickets there.
I don't have time to get into this now, but I just want Dean to know this. There's a million year-end lists. There's not time for you to get through all of them. So next week, I'm going to have my list of the best year-end lists. It's just a list of the list, Dean. I'm not going to get any of the content, but it's the best of the year-end lists.
It's about time.
Just so you guys know, Wendy Snyder weighing in, I can't remember who I picked, exclamation point. I said the Zombies for sure, and no Janet Jackson. That's all I remember. So
we went to the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in Cleveland this summer.
That's
our trip.
Great.
And they let you pick a person. You can write in there. And so Miles, we were listening to Smashing Pumpkins in the car, so we put Smashing Pumpkins, but we misspelled it. And Miles got really sad because he's like, "They're not going to know what it is." I'm like, "They're not counting this." Buddy.
How did you misspell it?
It was just because you typed it in. I think there was the S and the H went through.
Smashing Pumpkins were on Kimmel a couple nights ago, like the pieces of the band that are still together. And the lead singer's been on the show a few times.
Yeah.
The founder. Yeah. You know what I'm talking about?
Mr. Corrigan, right?
Yes.
Billy.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
Or William.
Billy, he of the T.
Yeah.
He was wearing it like a kimono. I mean, you know, he always wears like bizarrely cool things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We had him on the show about a month ago, and he was wearing two capes.
I
love it.
There's wardrobe people for any rock star but when you bring Billy Corgan the kimono, does he go, "Yeah, sure, whatever"?
I like the two capes. One cape's weird. Two capes, not weird.
You always have to have backup, though.
I would like to wear in Downers Grove, I'm going to wear two capes along with my 9-inch nails.
Thank God for telling me now so I don't show up in the same thing. All right, get back to TV. Thank you.
See ya.
That's Dean Richards, and he'll be back tomorrow. Talk about some of these weekend movies that are opening up. First at 8:33. Headlines next at 7:20 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Skyline Studio.
This is the Steve Cochran Show
on 7:20 WGN.
8:45.
Did you get your cast assignment? Did you do the table read yesterday?
I did not. I was off yesterday. So I did not.
I thought maybe you'd come in for it, though. Like, even
I don't have that kind of commitment.
But you're such a responsible when it comes to things outside
of performing.
The show.
Completely.
Yeah. So dedicated performer.
Yeah. I was at the East St. Louis house. So swinging back into the city, it's a long commute.
That's a long way. Right.
I saw a post on something about a picture of the table read. There were about four people there. The only one that mattered in that photo was Rick Hogan. Yes, he was there.
You still have a crush on Rick
Bill
Hogan?
The engineer. It's not a crush. I just think I'm fascinated by.
No, you light up whenever you say Rick Hogan's name like it's Christmas.
He's a legend.
Oh, that voice.
Yeah, he's one time 2 years ago, he was in recording some spots over the holidays that people needed, and he was swearing about it to me, and I thought, this is the coolest thing I've ever seen. Like, he's like swearing, you know.
Rick Hogan cursing. It doesn't get any better than this.
Yeah, it was pretty cool.
He's a great guy, too, by the way, in case you ever wondered. You know, there's a lot of people you meet. Like, you think Andy Mazur's a great guy. Turns out he's a total diva.
Big time.
Can I ask you a baseball question?
You can.
Because nobody knows baseball more than you.
Okay.
Well, you're the guy.
I'm the guy.
The White Sox and the Cubs have both been quiet. There's been a lot of rumors about the White Sox, and they have made a few moves.
Yeah.
Are we going to get any blockbusters out of this?
I don't think...
Because it ends today.
Yeah, it ends today. They have the Rule 5 draft coming up a little bit later, but I don't believe there'll be any big moves coming out of the winter meetings. Now, for some reason, these meetings have become like the old GM meetings where a lot of those deals were, at least the groundwork was laid. And I don't know if Machado or if Harper is going to go first, because I don't know which one wants to set the market.
If you, well, right, because you want the number to be set and then you can react to it. So right. If you, do they both have Scott Boras?
No.
Oh.
They have rival
competing
agents.
Because Scott Boras is Bryce, right?
Harper? Yes.
Who's the other agent?
That I
is
don't
it Steve
know.
Mandel?
I don't think it is.
Mandel, you never know. He's everywhere.
Yeah.
And speaking of Steve Mandel, that reminds me of the last piece, and that's Mike Ditka.
Oh, yeah.
Ditka is recovering, and everything I was told turned out to be a big pile of nonsense. He had a heart attack was much more serious than they had heard.
Yeah, because the news came out it was a mild heart attack.
And well, I talked to people who know Ditka.
It was not a mild heart attack.
Major heart attack.
Yeah.
And his second or third?
I think
at least his second.
I think it's three, because he didn't have one at the golf course, right?
He had a stroke, or yeah. They called it a stroke. So he's
while
had
he was
health issues.
Yeah, while he was coaching the Bears.
I don't mean that like he had a stroke while he was watching McMahon play quarterback.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean a legitimate medical stroke.
Yes.
So anyway, Coach, we want you to get better.
Yeah, get better. Definitely get better.
Dave Lozano, would you say?
Yeah,
Dan Lozano is the agent for Manny Machado.
Okay. Yeah, and apparently they don't like each other.
They don't like each other.
Well, all right, last question there then.
Yes.
Percentage-wise. Harper coming to the White Sox? Less than 10%?
No, I'd say it's a little bit more than 10%, because apparently from what...
20%.
I'll go 18.
18%. Machado coming to the White Sox.
I'd put that a little less. Put that about 10.
Really? Because I had heard Machado was more likely than Harper.
I would think that they want to come to Chicago because of the market opportunity.
Well, and that's the thing. With Harper, they apparently made a presentation to him, and he was very impressed not only with, obviously, the city, but also the way that the White Sox are set up to win and win for the foreseeable future with some young talent.
But can you, for guys that want to win, knowing your career is not forever, can you sell upside a year or two down the road?
I think you can, because he's young enough that he's going to be around for part of it. He's going to be around for all of it.
And frankly, let's say that these baseball players have egos.
What?
No,
dude? What?
No.
Imagine if Bryce Harper takes that big, huge contract, and then they go to the playoffs. It's Bryce Harper's team.
Yeah.
There you go.
His ball club.
So it's different than if I get pitched at 57.
Yeah.
I got to win right now.
You have to win.
I got to win today.
You have to win yesterday.
Stand by. A couple of important gentlemen I'd like you to meet in just a second. And a good cause, too. An important cause. Important initiative more than a cause. That's both.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show.
It is I-53. If you listen with regularity, you know that we have a commitment to City Colleges that we're quite fond of. And, Sandberg, I give you a lot of credit for this, because I know this matters to you.
It does very much. Well, because it's often overlooked, but a very important process in getting our young people in the city, that, you know, getting them involved in programs that have effects on all of us, not just the what we picture kids going to college. You know, going away from a four-year school.
And City Colleges does a nice job of getting people in jobs, like the entire network, like no other organization I can think of off the top of my head, because you may be familiar with this. You put your kid in a four-year private school, you drop $250, maybe, if you're lucky, and your child comes out and goes, I feel like I want to do something else with my life.
Yeah.
So we had a couple people here that I want you to meet. Billy Hubbard is a student who's got a great story. But before we do that, let's talk to Dr. Sean Jackson, president of Truman College. Dr. Sean, doctor, what do we call you?
Sean Jackson, president
Sean's okay?
of Truman College. Yes, sir.
Well, nice to see you. Congrats on your own success.
Oh, thank you.
Your parents were teachers?
Yes, both of my parents were teachers. Gift and a curse, but I followed them in their footsteps, became a teacher as well, and I've been through education now for about 18 years.
Are your parents still around to talk about how proud they are?
They are still there, yes.
Okay. That's nice to hear. I want you to talk about this Men of Color in Education initiative, but first let's meet Billy. Billy Hubbard worked in the corporate world doing what?
I worked in a mailroom, and my last corporate job was a duplicating operator at a consulting firm.
But,
basically, I made copies all day.
But in the back of your mind, and you're a dad, you got four kids, in the back of your mind, you always wanted to teach.
I knew I always wanted to do something with children, but I just didn't know what until corporate America kind of soured me on corporate. and I decided to go back to school.
You know, you're the only one that's ever been soured in corporate America.
You want to be an elementary ed teacher?
I want to start off with early education and then eventually go into elementary ed.
The mayor is quite proud of the fact, and I think rightfully so, of the early education opportunities he's been able to get started in the city that weren't available before, and the statistics of kids in the city and in the education starting out. Because you know the deal, Billy. You don't get them young,
right?
You're gonna have problems later.
Exactly.
And that obviously is part of the initiative of City Colleges. Sean, this Men in of Color initiative, speak to that specifically.
Yeah, so the Men of Color initiative is being led by Truman College on behalf of City Colleges of Chicago, mm-hmm. With some excellent partners, Chicago Public Schools, DFSS, supporting men of color to get into the classroom. Right now, men of color don't tend to exist in our classrooms across the board. If you look at some of the data points, 76.7% of the teaching population in Illinois is made up of females. You can even You can even see some of those same statistics in our higher ed space, with roughly 6% of our full time faculty being made up of Latino and Black males. So we look at this as an opportunity to support someone like Billy in their educational journey to become educators.
Sean, is that because in the past men of color didn't want the job, or was it because the institutions didn't try to recruit men of color?
Well, it's extremely interesting because quite oftentimes we don't treat education as a profession. You know, part of our what we talk about is if we celebrated educators like we celebrate athletes and entertainers, think of the possibilities. And so we see this as an opportunity to uplift the field of education as a true profession and to really start early in an individual's academic career so they can understand that teaching is a viable profession.
So when do you have to get to it? I mean, is it a junior high thing? When do you start exposing the fact that you could be a great teacher?
Yeah, so what's interesting is this is extremely unique that we are partnering with Chicago Public Schools and we are going after juniors and seniors in high school, letting them see the tangible role models that are already in the system. One of the things that makes this program unique is a student like Billy is going to have an opportunity to work with a mentor. And our mentors come from Chicago Public Schools, all having different touch points in education, the majority of them being educational leaders in the system. So some phenomenal educators that had their own educational journey going into the teaching field.
And I would also imagine that, and Billy, this is a question for you as well, but this idea that, you know, there's going to be mentors who are going to teach you how to navigate the educational system with their experiences. But I would also think the students, you know, because every teacher brings a different perspective to the classroom. And if you have one type of perspective that is always being brought to the classroom, that's how, you know, you may not be able to see different perspectives as you become an adult and use your education. Do you see it that way, that you bring a different perspective than, say, somebody else bringing to the classroom?
I think so. I think with me being in the Chicago public school system and in the suburban school systems, I think I have, like, the best and the worst of both worlds. So I feel like I have a little bit more to offer the students and even some of my fellow mentees to talk about education, some of the roads that I've been down where education is concerned. I have had an amazing math teacher in high school, and he's been memorable since I graduated high school, and he was actually at the launch of Men of Color in Education.
How great is that?
Yeah.
That's very cool.
Dr. Jackson knew him, called him.
Completing the circle.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Very
cool.
There, in some of these neighborhoods of Chicago Public Schools, some of these families, the kids seeing a male teacher, especially a man of color, in the role of teacher, might be the only male they encounter in that type of role for them. And so it's really important for when you're growing up to not just see the women taking care of you, you know, that there are men dedicated to furthering you.
You got to model it, right?
Way.
You got to show young men it's okay. And not only is it okay, if this is your dream, go chase it. So where are the mentors coming from?
So the mentors are coming from Chicago Public Schools. Before I took on this role at CCC, I was with Chicago Public Schools for 15 years as a teacher, assistant principal, and a district level administrator. And so through that time, I've developed relationships and kinships with a lot of the male educators in the system that are really excited to give back and have taken this opportunity to teach some of our mentees some of the things that they have learned along the way.
Great way to pay it forward. Billy, how'd you hear about this?
I was in class. Well, actually, I got an email Sunday night from my political science professor. I responded. got another response at the end of the night. Next morning, I was walking down the hall. I saw her, wanted to thank her, and director Kiss Allen Glover was in the hall waiting on another student. She introduced us, and then it just went from there.
Yeah, the dominoes start to fall.
Domino effect, snowball effect, however.
And we were talking off the air. You've got four kids who are, I think you said, 17 to 24?
Yeah.
They got to be just unbelievably proud of you.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole family. I'm texting, telling people about it. And
guess what Dad did today?
Can you FaceTime? And yeah, all of that.
How do young men or people that love somebody that could be eligible for this, what do they do and how do they find out more?
So we have a couple of ways. Obviously, social media is big for us. So you can follow us at MOC Education, at MOC Education. I also issue out challenges to some of our educators across the city for this. So that is at TR Prez Dr. J is my Twitter handle, and we send out challenges and give out information on some of our mentors and mentees. You can also call our Dean of Education and Teacher Programs, Holly Ware J. That number is 773-907-4456.
TR Prez, P-R-E-S or Z?
P-R-E-S.
Yeah, because if you have a disease, then somebody go, you run this place and
right.
Spelled it wrong? It's great to see both of you. Good luck, man. Good luck
Thank
in the career.
You.
I have no question you're going to be a heck of a teacher. And
the back end of this program, I think, is going to be a great career for me.
It's going to be great. And working with little kids?
Yeah.
I don't know about you, but as your kids get older, my kids are 31 and 27, mm-hmm. You miss the little kid thing.
Yeah.
Was that part of it for you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, let's go out in the hallway and cry. Great to see you. Good luck, Billy. And Dr. Sean, thank you very much for the work you're doing.
Appreciate it. Thank you so much.
And thanks to everybody at City College's Northwestern Medicine Newsroom is where Steve is next.
So after that Christmas, nothing was the same. Maybe it was a dream, but my whole life changed. The name of the firm is now Marley, Scrooge, and Cratchit. I guess I caught the Christmas magic. You could call it a comeback. My spirit's been gone for years, but I'm back with this track for all y'all to hear. MC Scrooge, and in case you missed this, the M stands for Mary and the C is for Christmas. Welcome everybody to my celebration. But what's a Christmas party without some decorations? We're gonna light this up. This is gonna be fun. Count it.
3, 2, 1. It's easy.
The best 80 minutes of your life.
There you go.
That's what you're going to get. Q right Brothers, Christmas Carol at Shakes Theater. Puzzle Pringle is very angry. He got up really early to talk to me.
Yeah.
He's not happy, but
exactly.
He did bring...
Like three cups of coffee, man.
He did bring creative producer Rick Boynton. Welcome to both of you.
Thanks. Thanks for having us this morning.
What up?
Let's get the first of our blatant plugs out.
This is amazing. It's the fifth year for the Q Brothers Christmas Carol at the Chicago Shakespeare Theater. It's hard to believe that because you blink your eye. I remember when it was debuted.
Yeah.
What's it feel
you
like?
You blink your eye and then you're old.
And then you're old.
Right.
But
easy.
Does it the same show? I mean, do you change it up or when you have a holiday tradition like this and a success, or do you just let it ride?
Yeah, I mean, we change it up a little bit every year. I mean, the script, I would say, is probably like 40 or 70% different from the very first year that we actually did it. I mean, this is, for anybody who doesn't know, the Q Brothers Collective, we are known for doing hip-hop musicals. The thing that I think that put us on the map was Othello the Remix, which was a adaptation of Shakespeare's Othello.
Wait, by the way, don't skate over that, because that's hilarious to me. The idea that you guys sit around and you go... We could funk up Othello a little bit.
Exactly.
Yeah, we get that.
You know, it was great. We got a commission from the Globe in London, so we wrote it in how many months, Poss? Like 4 months?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, like 4 months and then a couple of weeks to like actually rehearse it, thanks to people like Rick.
And then we premiered it at the Globe. Yeah, we premiered it at the Globe.
But the Shakespeare rap vibe was a little bit different, right? So Shakespeare didn't have that. The writing, there's the rhythm is completely different.
Yeah. Well, the whole thing is it actually operates more like opera. The whole thing is rapped over beats. There's a lot of singing in it, but it's mainly just MCs ripping. We play like 20, 30 different characters, and the whole time we are rapping, basically.
And you know what's hilarious? Yeah. I think that Shakespeare would, I think if he were alive today, he'd probably be a hip-hop artist.
It's great prose,
Yeah.
It's all about language and coining new words.
Yeah. What I love about the Q Brothers Collective in general is, and I've had this conversation before on WGN Radio, just, you know, the whole explosion of Hamilton and the musical and everything that happened, they predate that. And there's a lot of, you can make the argument too.
That's why the lawsuit exists.
No, but they're right. But they're influencers, they're inspiration.
We can't talk about that right now.
A huge success on Broadway. But do you guys see it that way? That, I mean, it,
I'm not saying that there's, you know, that it's a logical extension of what they did and what you guys do, but there is, it's in the air. It's the idea of what you bring hip hop to classics, to Shakespeare, to what you do here with Christmas Carol and others is something that obviously has been successful.
Well, I mean, all I can say towards that is, like, hip hop is American, is like an American born art form.
100%.
And the thing is, the reason why it has taken off since like the early and mid 70s, the reason why it's taken off is because that it is an American art form and it is pervasive in the same way that jazz is. And so, like, everybody, it speaks to everybody, I think, in some way. So it only makes sense that we would start to infuse it in all of our other art forms, be it theater or film or anything else. So people like us, we take it and we use it to actually spin stories and do storytelling in a way that is that communicates to the wider audience as the audience grows. So taking something like Shakespeare, and in this case, taking Dickens and telling the story using hip hop, like everybody relates to it in a huge, huge way.
Rap, jazz, and poetry all combined to make hip hop. Now, the idea of transferring hip hop to a Christmas classic, Rick, that's up to you. How'd that work out?
You know, we had a history because we had, as you said, we had done Othello the Remix. We had done a show called Funk It Up About Nothing based on Much Ado About Nothing. Right. So,
and oddly enough, the entire cast was white. No, I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, I'm a really dark white person. I get really good tans. Yeah. Go to the tanning bed really every day.
Yeah, I gotta say.
No, we were approached and we thought, you know what, we should work on this, and we did. We decided to work on it, and we had a blast doing it. These guys are unbelievably creative. Unbelievably creative.
What the Q brothers leave on the floor, what you write and don't put in, is probably pretty entertaining, I'm thinking.
Oh, yeah. Well, we have what we call like a special place in Hades for all the characters and stuff like that that don't make it to the final show. We had like a singing, dancing weather girl. We had two guys named Juan and Ali who ran an Indexican food truck. Like all those guys. And we missed them all. They are lovely people, but sometimes they don't make it.
You gotta keep it to 80 minutes, so
exactly.
Best 80 minutes of your life. You play Bob Cratchit?
Yes, I do. I play Bob Cratchit. I also play Martha Cratchit. I also play the ghost of Christmas Past, who is a amalgamation of everybody put on your old school hats right now. Let me see. He plays an amalgamation of Curtis Blow, Grandmaster Melly Mel. You sprinkle in a little bit of Houdini for anybody who really knows Houdini, and a little bit of Run DMC in there, and you get the ghost of Christmas Past.
1976 to 1986. You got it covered right there.
Where? You want a little taste? You want a little bit?
Yeah.
C-H-R-I-S-T-M-A-S P to the A to the S to the T on the ghost of the Piggity Pass.
That's tremendous. That's all you need right there. I'd take 80 minutes of that.
Yeah. But we it's not just that. We also update to to a little bit of Twista and a little bit of Outkast and a little bit of Snoop Dogg with our Ghost of Christmas Present. And then when we get to Ghost of Christmas Future, it goes even deeper into a lot of the EDM sort of sounds. That is more about really like hard industrial sort of like great pop sounds that you hear on the radio. Now.
You guys have found a home at Shakespeare Theater, and I think about this. This is a generic argument about the purists. It'll say Shakespeare's done a certain way, do Shakespeare this way. And I would think that with traditional Christmas and you know different holiday plays, it's the same way that, you know, we like our Christmas Carol a certain way. You have been so instrumental in getting different audiences into the theater. But talk about that conflict of the purest way to do the plays and what you guys do.
Yeah, you answered this one.
No, you know what? I think that's where theatrical electricity lives, is between that perceived conflict between the classic and what isn't classic. And what's been awesome about this process is that it's working from, you know, the very youngest to the very oldest. And it's everybody's having a great time, and they're not expecting to. You know, I'll tell you something. I'm not a hip hop guy, And so the first time, like,
despite the way that he's dressed.
Yeah, completely.
But no, truly, I'm not. And I'm sitting there, and they're doing this thing for me, and they're like, you know, Barbara Gaines, our artistic director, was like, do you want to work with them? And I was like, yes, I'd love to work with them. I want to develop this. And I'm sitting there, and it's like, they're like spitting rhymes, like unbelievably. And I'm sitting there, and I'm like, oh my God, I'm like the kids that come to the Shakespeare plays, and we do this whole thing at the beginning, say, don't freak out, just relax.
Right.
Let the words, like, you know, wash over you, and you're going to get it. And literally, I sat there, you know, hearing these guys do this, and I was like, I'm not going to freak out. It's good.
You took your own advice.
And I did. It was great. And that's where I think, honestly, I think Shakespeare would be all over that.
You know what I love, though? I love the idea that the Shakespeare Theater Company goes behind closed doors and they go, are you sure we're okay with this? Are we sure? Because you guys have to
Are they going to curse?
You guys have to be the relative that comes to Thanksgiving, that lives in L.A., that you're always afraid is going to tear Thanksgiving dinner up. That's right. Who you guys are.
Yeah.
If you've ever seen a show, and it's so... I've taken Miles to a couple of Shakespeare shows, and that preamble at the beginning, like, telling the kids, don't freak out about the traditional language that's good. We're not going to change it. That's so important.
That is important.
And even when I'm sitting there, I'm like, okay. And then you're like, all right, yeah, I think I'm following along. And then there's a moment where it clicks in, and you're like, I understand so much more about what I'm watching because I let myself understand. I didn't shut myself off. I didn't pretend like this isn't for me.
That's exactly have a 65-year-old grandma that just texted in. She said, Q Brothers, as much fun as Book of Mormon, everyone must go love it.
What that? Oh, amen.
Nice. Nice 65-year-old grandma.
Best 80
Shout
minutes.
Out to 65-year-old grandma.
Well, let me tell you, she's the hippest 65-year-old grandma in America right now.
Word up.
That's awesome.
Best 80 minutes of your life. Rick, how do I get tickets?
You go to ChicagoShakes.com.
ChicagoShakes.com.
Yeah, exactly. And you come down, and I'd be remiss if I one didn't shout out my crew, my collaborators, GQ, JQ, and Jackson Doran. Yeah, we created this piece, and I have to say that it's a family friendly thing. So I know some people hear hip hop, and then they get a little, you know, they get a little scurred. Like, don't be scurred. Come on down. It's for the whole family.
It's a blast.
Bring your kids, and you're gonna be dancing in your seats, and at the end, you're gonna be dancing on your feet.
Justin, you gotta bring Miles.
Yeah. Hey, yeah. We'll be there.
Miles will be in the next show. Are you kidding me?
He's exactly. I want to see Steve down there, too.
Miles. Oh, I do.
See you with your hands in the air. Just
come on. Freestyling all morning long.
Oh, all right. Okay, ready? I'll drop a beat for you.
Not now, you won't. great to see you. Congrats on the success.
Thank you so much.
Thank you guys for coming in. And the website one more time?
ChicagoShakes.com.
Get your tickets.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
I'm doing Clarence Goodbody tomorrow, and It's a Wonderful Life. I may do it all hip-hop now. I was trying to figure out what the voice would be anyway. So I may rap the entire
thing. I want you to do it like he said, Twista. That's
fast. Yeah.
Rapid fire.
What rhymes with underpants? Because there's that scene where Clarence Goodbody is washing his underwear.
Get a boil lanced.
Yeah.
Underpants boy. Yeah, okay. I got you. Thanks, Andy.
You can be Andre 3000. I'll be big boy to your Andre 3000.
Can I be Will I Am?
Yeah, you can be Will I Am.
Thank you.
The ghost of Will I Am.
Can I work this in? My boys don't dance. They just pull up their pants and lean back. Can I work that in somewhere?
Yeah, okay. Absolutely.
I can't think of anything that's dumber. Grouch, Christmas is a bummer. Beaming faces everywhere, happiness is in the air. I'm telling you, it isn't fair. I hate Christmas.
This is from Hochberg's first album. Very visionary. David Hochberg's here. Team Hochberg ready to help you in a number of different ways to stop your financial foolishness and get your act together. Good morning, Mr. Hochberg.
Good morning. I actually love Christmas. You know why?
Because, no, I don't know why.
Come on, guess. Come on, we got 17 minutes.
Chinese food.
It's my birthday.
Your birthday isn't Christmas.
So every year, I know exactly how many days I have to go until my birthday.
How have you and I been friends all these years, and you haven't told me about that again and again and again?
Well, we don't talk off air. I'd like to talk more. I'd like to hang out more, but you refuse. You know,
I've been in the meetings when the Hochberg comes up on the phone and Steve hits dismiss.
Right. Yeah, I feel the pain. I can feel the finger.
That is never.
I can feel the finger on the button
every time.
Yeah. One time.
Every time.
Sorry, I missed an opportunity to say Happy Hanukkah to you.
Thank you.
Hanukkah.
I That I still feel that pain. That was great. It would have been nice to get a
We're
call.
We're taking an awful lot personally here.
Yeah, it's all right.
You're in the mood, David.
I'm over like it. I'm over it. I'm in the holiday spirit.
Let's jump in, Satty.
Yeah, bring it up, baby.
All right, current interest rates.
Current interest rates are in the high fours, low fives, depending upon how much you're putting down, your credit score, type of property. So that's a loaded question. You got to be careful out there because people will quote you a low rate, but then just pile on additional closing costs.
And as I've said many, many times, and I've experienced this myself, my daughter just did the first house with you, first mortgage with you guys.
Hey, I thought she used Ross Cochran.
She did.
Team Hochberg.
Team Hochberg. Ross did a phenomenal job.
Ross recovering from having 14 wisdom teeth removed yesterday. Who knew he had that many?
Yeah, he's like one of those raptosauruses. It's crazy.
But I'm here to tell you what I've always said.
Yeah.
You will be honest.
Sure.
And you'll be honest regardless of whether it means business or not because you want people to know where they are.
Yeah, we would like people to understand what they're getting themselves into. You know, you could, it's like those gas stations, right? You know, with the deceiving signs, $2.35 for, you know, $2.19.
A car
wash. Or, well, with the car wash that you can't read, all you see is the $2.19. Or, like, you know, $6.75, okay? you know, for that.
Right.
But, you know, but people like, oh, you know what? I'm going to go get a car wash. I'm going to pay $17 for a car wash,
right?
Okay, to get to save 30 cents in gas.
Right.
Well, when you do the math there, Spartacus, it doesn't add up. Okay, so what frosts me is, and I think those signs should be outlawed at the gas station. Personally, I have no power over that. I'm just expressing my opinion, which doesn't mean anything. But you know, but when I look at those,
wouldn't
signs,
it be odd if you had power over gas station pricing?
Would that
signs?
Be great?
Wouldn't that be strange?
I would be like, this is what you're paying. And this is it, right? You want a car wash, and come would, in and get a car wash.
It would
wash.
Be your face with that finger pointing
right,
at them
pointing
as they
out
drove
them.
By.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, exactly. It absolutely frosts me.
So the point being,
yes.
Your competitors who want to do their little teasers and their little rockets and various things,
sure.
You'll tell people the truth.
Here, they spend over $100 million in advertising. I know what I spend every year in advertising, and I know what it costs, and I know the return that we need in order to get it back.
When it's spending, a lot, by the way. I think we should charge you more, but you do spend a lot.
Yeah, everybody here at WGN thinks they should charge me more, too, and I just say drop Wednesday. So every time they pull that crap on me, so got me all flustered. So here, you know, press this button, get a mortgage, you know, and do all this. Oh, I'm Jay, you know, the president of this company. I created this lock and shop thing. It's been around for years. It's like him taking credit for drinking water. Okay, I mean, for the love of God, what else can he do? Right? Oh,
right.
Yeah. We've got this lock and shop
thing.
He's
a miracle.
And then he talks real fast. Applicable things apply. Call us. And then, you know, I applied for a mortgage with Rocket Loving Lending. Okay? They charged me over $5,000 more in closing costs. Yeah. You know, they didn't know it was me and that I was calling as a setup call. They charged me 5 G's more in closing costs. And I've got it in writing and a quarter more than what I could have gotten your WGN listeners if they would have called me or Rocket Loving Lending.
Right.
All right? So Team Hochberg was 5 G's less and a quarter point lower because I don't have a Rocket program that I have to fund.
Right.
Thank you. It's not even 10 o'clock and I'm sweating already, for love of God.
You taking your blood pressure meds?
You know what?
Today?
I've got a heart monitor on right now and I got to press the button to tell the guy.
I think it's smoking.
Well, I think he's going to be like, what the hell happened at 10 to 10 on Thursday?
So I'm like,
it was on a
Cochran
show.
The less screamy version of that is that they have to pay for their fancy apps and advertising.
Yes.
And you are going to pay for it when you get your mortgage.
Thanks for breaking. I got to have you walk around with me, Mary, because you break it down. You're like,
you scream and then she goes, the less screamy version of that answer is.
Going on.
I am a customer of David Hochberg's.
Yeah, we all
have done amazing things with our mortgages.
I think it says a lot about who you are as a person, not the lunatic that you are here.
Yes.
That all the people here have gone into what is, in most cases, the biggest transaction of their lives.
Absolutely.
And trusted your team.
Well, when Pat called, he had some things going on that he had no idea was going on.
Right?
I mean, you pull your
credit.
And
then there was some screaming very similar to David Hochberg's ones.
On your side of the phone.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, we found some things. Pat's like, what the hell is this? I go to Pat. I'm like, what the hell is this? He's like, I have no idea.
I thought you said you had good stuff going on.
Right. And he had a lot of good stuff, but he had some stuff. He had no idea.
And you helped him clear it up.
And we had, you know, so it took a couple of days to clear it up. Well, bing, bang, boom, we got it cleared up.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Everything was great. We got him into an unbelievable opportunity with his beautiful bride next to me in a gorgeous house in the northern suburb. We won't give the address.
I'll give the address out later.
That's good. Okay. Which has great appliances in there.
The only problem is people use my circle driveway to turn around.
Yes.
Right.
Which frosts her. I just do that just to piss her off. I have no reason to go down that street just to go through her driveway. She's like, were you here? I'm like, yeah, I just wanted to go
through. I sit at the kitchen
this.
Table and I just watch and I seethe.
Right. You know what you should do? You should put those strips down that the cops have to pop people's tires.
But then the car would be stuck there.
Yeah, but you know what? They're slow spikes that you can get them out and just drop them, have them die in the street, never do that again.
Just an idea, man.
I am loaded with great ideas.
I want you to pick one thing you want to rant about, talk about when we come back.
Justin and I were talking about it.
But first,
yes.
Dennis is in Bensonville. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning. Listen, everything that Mr. Hochberg says is true. He did my mortgage for me. He did a HARP for me about 2.5 years ago. And he got me such a great rate that I'm now about $15,000 less in my principal than I was on the previous mortgage, which was by a big bank that wasn't trying to help me at all.
I'm giving you the rare sitting ovation for your choice. Very well done by you.
I tried the Rocket Mortgage thing, and they wanted to charge me thousands more in closing costs. Going to give me a great rate, but thousands more. Now, I knew there was going to be closing costs because my mortgage was under $100,000. Mm-hmm. But Mr. Hochberg explained everything to me, and it was plain, it was simple, and everything that he says is true. He helped me get my credit straight.
What a good guy.
I called him. He helped me get my credit straight. He told me which direction to go to help me with my credit score and everything like that. And right now, going from a 430 credit score when I approached him, it was under 600. I'm now rapidly approaching 700, 710.
Nice.
Nice job.
There you go. Hey, Dennis, you're a good man. Thank you for that. Yeah. You should just have Dennis follow you around. Forget about Sandra.
I don't even know who Dennis is, so that's very nice that he called.
Isn't that nice?
Was great. Yeah. Thank you, Dennis.
Changed his life.
But you know what? Dennis is one of thousands of people that we've been fortunate enough to be able to connect with over the radio station, over this and the other stations that I'm involved with throughout the Chicagoland area over the past 15 years. And it's helping the people, putting themselves in a better position to succeed so they can either buy a home, buy a car, you know, get out of the home they're in, you know, pay off their credit cards, maybe pay their home off faster. So it's good. It's very, that made me feel good.
I can tell you.
Coming in here, not so much. But after that call, I feel a lot calmer.
I can tell you, as David Hochberg's friend, he likes to help people. He really does. I'm not kidding about that. Regardless of what he says about me. You have experts who help with the credit scores of people, too. Yeah. You mentioned, I've never heard of a credit score below 500. That's a miracle.
Yeah, that's pretty challenging. When you get below 500, you've had a lot of things either happen to you that you had no control over, mm-hmm. or you get into a situation where you're in a state that no matter what you do is wrong, and no matter you turn, there's a freight train that's going to...
Well, Dennis, how impressive in Dennis?
That's phenomenal.
Dennis, listen to you.
Yeah, no, that is. I appreciate you. Dennis, if you call me, I'd love to take you to a hockey or a basketball game in the Team Hochberg Center
Look
Court Suite.
January 19th would be a good night to do.
I think that's... somebody's asking for that game.
Diane! Diane, are you with me?
Hello.
Hey, Diane, what do you want to ask?
I have a son looking to buy his first house, mm-hmm. and he's trying to get his credit score up. Been working on it for about 6 months,
yeah.
and I'm telling him it needs to be over 700, and I don't know if I'm giving him the right advice.
No, if you want to get him out of your house, you do not have to be at 700 in order to buy a home. We have people that we just came out with a program, no credit score. We could get you a loan if we get you through the computer. So
higher the credit score, the better?
Higher the credit score, the better the rate. The easier it is in underwriting.
But you can get into a house
with as little as 580 credit score, and now we have a program that was just released yesterday. No credit score, no problem, is the way our marketing department.
Diane, you know what this is to me? This is like when your kid's in high school, and if you tell him the truth about the grades that he really needs, he's only going to work that hard.
Yeah.
So I would encourage him to get the credit score up over 700. I think that's smart by you.
Right, but we could get him out of the house now.
You're going against David.
Yes, I am. Yeah. I would encourage you to get him over 700, Diane, because I think you're a good mom, and it's the right thing to do.
And Diane, if
you let Diane talk?
Okay, go ahead, Diane.
Diane, please answer.
And down payment for looking at a $200,000 house, how much should he have?
He could get in. Is he a veteran?
No.
A veteran, you could get in with zero down. You can't get any less than that. Is he buying in a major metropolitan area?
Western suburbs.
Okay, if he's a first-time home buyer and meets certain income limitations, IDA, Illinois Housing Development Authority, has a down payment assistance program up to $7,500 if he qualifies. And there's other programs that we can get you in as little as 1% or 3% down.
You got to call the details.
But there's a number of different programs.
So what's your number?
It's very simple, 312-751-1333. We could take a look at his credit now and give him advice on how to get it higher if he wants to wait to get it higher or get it done now.
The one thing David Hochberg wants to get in before I throw him out of the studio when we come back.
This is 720 WGN Chicago.
David Hochberg, you work where?
I work at on Team Hochberg at Pearl Mortgage. I'm bad at Deerfield. We have offices all over Chicago, but my home office is Deerfield.
And to get a hold of Team Hochberg, what do people do?
Very simple. You can either go to WGNDavid.com or call us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 312-751-1333. Guaranteed. Anybody that advertises on the station, lowest rates, lowest closing costs, guaranteed.
Wendy is another Hochberg customer.
Yep.
And I remember when you refied Bill's house and didn't tell him. I mean, that's why full service.
Yeah, crazy. Well, that would be against the law. But Bill did come to me for advice. And I gave him outstanding. I believe
about girls.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I gave him outstanding.
How do I know
advice.
When they like me? I said, that's and right. David refinanced.
I get a
me.
Funny feeling whenever I'm around her. All right, the topic you said. What do you want to do for the holidays?
Taking a snapshot of your current financial portfolio situation and make a decision. Do you want to get into a better position going into next year? And we will give you an honest evaluation, and we will tell you straight up to your face without any, you know, candy canes or lollipop sugarcoating anything. This is where you're at. This is what you need to do. If you do this, you'll be good, right? If you don't do this, you'll be in the same pile of crap that you're in now. So if you want
to. It's a technical financial term, pile of crap.
Yeah. So if you want to advance yourself and get into a position to pay off your debt, you want to enhance your credit, if somebody's living in your basement with a 430 credit score, like my friend Dennis, who I didn't mean like, I don't know who you are. I've done loans for tens of thousands of people. I can't remember.
You're thrilled at Dennis.
I'm ecstatic. We took him from a 430 to up to almost a 700 now because he implemented the strategies that we laid out for Dennis and he put them into play. And he's in a heck of a lot better spot, which is phenomenal.
Well, I'll give you another quick endorsement. Bill and Wendy know this guy. There's a guy that we all know, and I can't say who it is. It rhymes with John DeCoste.
Yeah.
And he was upside down financially and more than willing to admit it, and you helped him.
Yeah, and we've talked about it on the show. He didn't know where to go. He kept running into himself, which, you know, is John DeCoste's MO. But, you know, I sat down with him and his wife and said, hey, here's where you're at. If you do this, everything will be better. And guess what? His wife took control, and they did everything. And now they came to me. They were in a very bad position, but now they're in their 700s.
Yeah.
And phenomenal position. And it only took about a year to get them into baby steps, right? Paid off some debt. They got a loan from a family member, paid off some debt, then enabled them to refinance their home, pay back the family
member.
It was a flexible situation, but they stayed according to the plan. They increased their credit scores over 150 points. And you could ask John, he'll verify it. He's very happy. Question.
And Bill, when you first talked to David, you had a credit score of 9, and I'd never heard of a credit
score. Yeah, he was the lowest I've ever seen.
Lowest ever, they said, right. Yeah.
Number again for the Hochberg team?
312-751-1333. WGNDavid.com, and I am making my thespian debut tomorrow during the play that Bill Leff has wrote me into. I appreciate
or written.
It. Let's not get technical here, right? I'm in the damn play, and I'm looking forward to it tomorrow. And thank you. I just want to thank your listeners and Bill and Wendy's listeners and all the WGN listeners. This is my last appearance, unless you guys want to have me back next week, which you probably
I
don't
get chances.
This year.
I just want to sincerely and humbly thank everybody that on WGN, all your listeners, all the staff for having me on, and all the listeners for allowing my team to come into their lives to help them better their lives.
You do know there were several appearances where we weren't hooked up to the transmitter.
I understand. No, you turn the red light on and make me feel better, and it's great.
I am thankful as we talk about New Year's.
Yes.
I'm thankful for your rants.
Thank you. And not yet, Steve. I'm still going, so back off.
Bill and Wendy are here. And what are you guys doing today on
We're
your final
a,
show
a
before
Christmas
the break?
Special.
Very Christmassy themed show.
Okay.
A mixologist, a bartender from
Andy
Elf
Williams?
Up.
Andy
no,
Williams?
No, Andy Williams
no.
is unavailable.
But Bill will wear his sweater.
A mixologist from Elfed Up, author Rick Goldschmidt, and David's friend Dennis.
Nat Kinkle. Nat Kinkle.
He's going to be on. Yeah.
Okay, good.
In the upper right-hand corner.
And tomorrow during your show, It's a Wonderful Life, you'll be talking about that. We will see you tomorrow.